Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and joining me is...
James Hunt, for now.
For now. You are joining us, listeners, for our sixth annual, I think, James, copies?
Yeah, why not?
Six, wow. now, obviously, in previous years, we would have had Seb here to do this with us. It was... We were debating whether to do this. It's also obviously been a weird year in terms of there's not been many new releases.
The lack of releases, yeah.
There hasn't been as many episodes of this podcast for, you know, for obvious reasons. And we were kind of discussing what was the best way to go forward with this. And we thought, hey, why not turn it into a big old Christmas end of year party? So James and I invited some of our pod friends along. James, do you want to run our listeners through who we've got joining us on later on this podcast?
Yes. So joining us in the discussion, we're going to have five people who have been on the podcast before. We've got Caroline, who first joined us for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in episode 10.
Caroline Cedar of the AV Club, of course. If you're not reading her rom-com columns, you should be.
That's very satisfying to say, rom-com columns. we've got Reese Williamson, who you will remember first joined us for Chronicle, which was episode 11.
Reese, I don't know if he's got anything to plug, so I'll just say he's on Twitter at Reese, where you can find him posting once every couple of months.
Yep, we've got Al Kennedy, who turned up for Scott Pilgrim versus the World, episode 12. So it's quite a run of guests we had there.
Yeah, and Al of course, one of the hosts of House to Astonish comics podcast.
Yeah, and Desert Island Discworld as well, his Discworld podcast, which is excellent.
So, listeners, if you're not listening to those already, why are you listening to this?
we've got Mike Leader, who I think he was first on for Hellboy. I think maybe he did a couple of guest appearances, but... episode 22, Hellboy, is the first full one he was on.
And Mike, what do we plug for Mike? He's got his podcast, Ghibliotech? Ghibliotech? Yep. Is that how do you pronounce it, James?
I would say Ghibliotech with a hard G.
Okay, well, I'm going to say Ghibliotech.
so we've got all the bases covered.
and he also commissions the Inside Cinema and Inside Game Strands on on the BBC.
I mean, he doesn't commission us, but he commissions people.
Yeah, listeners, if you want to tweet him and, you know, demand...
Don't ruin his life.
Demand to see my Ruby Sparks pitch brought to life. That would ruin a lot of people's lives.
and finally, we've got Amon Woman, who first joined us, I believe, for Deadpool, which was episode 27.
Which was, feels like a million years ago.
Yeah,
but and Amon obviously is. He's a
what's he not at this point?
He's on the bloody editorial team at Empire Magazine now.
Yeah,
he's on the Empire podcast again. If you're not listening to that, why are you listening to this? So yeah,
and that's it. That's our five guests. Al does turn up a little bit later because, as he revealed to us on WhatsApp later on, he'd fallen asleep on the floor of his child's bedroom.
I mean, when he joins, does he ever hit the ground running? So yeah, so listeners, we've got our sick Van Yor cuppies. We are we're running through all of the usual categories, but with a bit of a twist that, you know, all will be revealed when you join us in the past, which is the future for you. It's like Avengers Endgame. and then you can listen to us run through all the categories, and then you will rejoin this version of James and I at the end of the podcast to do a little bit of admin and to do the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Listen out for everyone getting progressively drunker.
Yes, especially Reese.
Especially Reese, yes.
Great, okay. Enjoy the rest of the show. Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe. We're at our annual show, The Cuppies, except we decided we're going to do something a little bit differently this year. This year, the films that were covered on the podcast included Superman Returns, Hulk, Josie and the Pussycats, Batman and Robin, Bloodshot, Terminator 2, X-Men Days of Future Past, Sonic the Hedgehog, Birds of Prey and Superman 4, which... not many of them are very good. So I'm not sure how interesting it would have been to debate, like, who's the best actor out of, I don't know, maybe Hugh Jackman again, or Vin Diesel, or George Clooney, I don't know, Brandon Routh. So what we thought we'd do is kind of broadly throw out this hellscape of a year that has been 2020. James and I have gone through this year's selections and kind of chosen nominal winners for each of these. And instead, what we're going to do is go back through the history of the Cuppies. We have five previous winners in each category, so six to choose from each. And we're going to essentially choose the champion of champions. I think for most of the, you know, for most of this stuff, we've covered all of the big hitters when it comes to superhero movies by this point anyway. So really what we're doing is selecting the greatest ever for comic book movies. You've only heard me so far. I'm joined by lots of guests. The first, of course, is James Hunt.
Hello.
And then let's go. I'm going to go clockwise on my Zoom. We've got Caroline.
Hi. Nice to be here to this little Christmas Zoom party celebration. Cuppies.
We're zooming. We're on camera for the first time. That's quite novel for us. So we can see each other. Our next guest, Reese, has even put clothes on for the occasion.
I've got clothes on. You're welcome. Happy to be here. As I said, Joey, I was expecting a sort of a nonsense, drunken, nothing chat with Joey and James, and then I looked at the Gmail invite maybe 5 minutes before we started. I was like, oh, there's real people on this. There's lots of real people with things. Oh shit. Okay. So yeah, great. Good to be with, you know, real people and not just Joe and James. It's great.
Next on my screen, we've got Amon.
Hello there. Yes.
Hey.
A real person.
One of the aforementioned real people. I'm not going to lie, we've got you here mostly to decide the best score category, and everything else is a bonus after that.
I feel used, but I'm all right with it.
And then finally, for now at least, we've got Michael.
Hello.
When was the last time you were on the podcast? It's been a while, right?
Hellboy 2 was the last full episode, but I was also on a news Minnesota that was on YouTube.
Oh, yes.
Before, after that
where,
well,
yeah.
Talking about the Sandman on Audible series. Was that, we went to the cast for that, I think?
Yeah.
Look, I'm excited because
I've
never been on an episode where Joe's drinking, so who knows what's going to happen.
That you know of.
Yeah, you probably have. Listen, it's Christmas. I've got a lovely beer here. I'm probably going to have a few more. mince pies might come out at some point this evening. It's a Christmas party. Listeners, don't expect the height of professionalism tonight.
For a change.
Yeah,
for yourself, Joe. I'm very professional. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm going to professionally introduce the first category. So we do this every year. Got to start off with a big one, but not too, you know, when you go like best director or, you know, best actor, actress first. We go best supporting. And I think this year we'll start with best supporting actor. Nominally, for this year, James and I have selected Patrick Stewart from Days of Future Past as the Best Supporting Actor winner. He will go head-to-head with, and this I'll go in reverse order through the years, Lawrence Fishburne for The Matrix, controversial winner last year. He's amazing, but is The Matrix a superhero movie? Was the debate we had every time that came up.
You guys covered it on your podcast.
We also covered Terminator 2 this year, and James and I went through every category going, this is probably the only good film we covered, but it can't win all the awards. Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight, Tom Hiddleston for The Avengers, Steve Buscemi for Ghost World, and J.K. Simmons for Spider-Man.
This is easy.
Is it? Right? Come on then, Amon.
One of these people could win, yeah.
Heath Ledger, Dark Knight. End of discussion. Next.
I'm inclined to agree, because he's the only one who has really, like, nailed the pop culture crossover.
Yeah.
He won an Oscar for it.
Yeah.
Quite.
He's got his award already. He's got his. You know, we can give the copy to somebody else.
James, you said it was hard. Who would you be fighting for?
I mean, it's hard because they're all great, but I couldn't take it away from Heath Ledger, given the opposition. Like, they're all good, but Heath Ledger is transcendent.
He benefits from having, like, a very meaty role, right? Like, I love J.K. Simmons in Spider-Man, but that's not really the role you're going to sink your teeth in. You know, you don't have the material, per se.
And he might win again for this character in the future, so.
Yeah.
Like, if Heath Ledger wasn't a part of this category, probably Lawrence Fishburne in The Matrix would be my pick. He's really... really great in that role.
Way in though, Amon. Is it a superhero movie?
No!
But he flies at the end. This is our entire argument. He flies at the end.
So does Air Bud. Doesn't make it superhero.
Very good.
Reese has been looking at the 2021 schedule. We're running out of movies, you guys. We're going to do
Air Bud 1-7.
Air Bud and all the Air Buddies franchise is coming next.
Yeah. I would wager no. It's a sci-fi movie, a very good sci-fi movie. It's not a superhero movie, even though it has some similarities with the genre. So I'll verge on that one.
Can you put the previous guys in the chat, or just say them again, just so we have.
I'll say them again. Patrick Stewart for Days of Future Past, Lawrence Fishburne for The Matrix, Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight, Tom Hiddleston for The Avengers, Steve Buscemi for Ghost World, and J.K. Simmons for Spider-Man. The first.
I think Hiddleston's the only one that would approach.
Yeah, and he's had a lot more material to work with over the years.
Yeah,
and that's the key, right? So Hiddleston and Simmons both have multiple films or multiple performances with which to crop up and build on that, or to delight us time and again. If this is just a supporting actor for a single film, it's got to be Heath Ledger or Lawrence Fishburne, but that's not a superhero movie.
And I think the Ledger performance as well, because it is kind of weightier than you tend to get in comic book movies, and the kind of the range of stuff that he gets to play as well, and how he kind of completely gets that character and keeps you guessing and leaves Joker as this enigma. And I don't think that's fully in the script as well. I know the script has like the different versions of the story he's telling, but I think the fact that you could kind of plaster on three or four different motivations for that character, and they're all believable because I think he's probably playing them all at different points in the film. And just that introductory scene with the pencil.
Right.
You could probably just say that one scene will do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's so interesting, like, with the Jack Nicholson portrayal of the character, for so long that had been so indelible, and it felt like, you know, I remember discussions in the build-up to The Dark Knight, like, how are they going to sort of move away from that? And with the Heath Ledger Joker, it's such an iconic performance. It feels like, you know, people are going to have to work that much harder to sort of create a new version of that character because of that version of the character.
And luckily no one's tried since.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Okay, I think that sounds like it's pretty unanimous then. The best supporting actor ever is Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. Okay, second category is it's one that is going to be weird to kind of do for a retrospective, but this is best new film. So each year we have just gone through the films released that year that we covered on the podcast and selected the winners. This year we went for Birds of Prey, which beat out Bloodshot and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic.
So
justice for Sonic.
Yeah. Wait, I have to say, I literally watched Sonic yesterday. I cried at the end. I loved it.
Did he fall on a spike and lose all his rings? What happened?
Listen, it's about family. He's found family. He just wants to be loved, and then he gets a little bedroom. And anyway, I'll defend Sonic.
Gets a little bedroom.
If you're going to defend Sonic, the reason to defend Sonic is because of Jim Carrey's performance as Robotnik, which is incredible, legitimately. But the movie around it is a bit meh.
But does Jim Carrey get a little bedroom at the end? That is what.
Yeah, no bedroom. Regrettably, I'm in it for Sonic James Marsden. I want James Marsden adopting rodents. I want that to be its own genre. That's my genre.
The Marsdenverse.
And listen, I get it. I cried at the original trailer for Sonic. those teeth. But yeah, so best new film went to Birds of Prey this year. The previous winners have been Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War, Wonder Woman, Captain America Civil War, and Ant-Man. And I think as you go to the middle of that list, that's where we really had, like, in the Endgame, Infinity War, Wonder Woman years, we had so many films to choose from. I'm still not necessarily sure we got it right Infinity War year. James would violently disagree, but that was the year of Into the Spider-Verse and Black Panther. And...
Oh. Responsible for this,
the listeners, Amon. We all picked a different one. I think I was arguing for Black Panther. Seb was arguing for Into the Spider-Verse, and James was arguing for Infinity War. We couldn't decide, so we put it to the listeners, and they picked Infinity War.
Democracy doesn't work. I've said it once. I'll say it 100 times. It doesn't work.
And in retrospect, even though I was arguing for Black Panther, I think probably the best new film. I think, anyway, the best new film that was released was Spider-Verse during our...
Without question. I say this as somebody who, you know, obviously loves Black Panther and loves Infinity War, but Spider-Verse was the best superhero film of 2018. It was the best film of 2018.
Even I'm looking back and going, like, I probably got that one wrong.
I said it, like, the next episode back, I announced it, and I was like, so this is picked Infinity War, but I think I've already changed my mind, because I rewatched Spider-Verse again, and it's really... Really
it's good. A perfect movie.
But this episode, this one we're recording now, has to be about regret and about dealing with the mistakes that you guys have made in your past. And this has to be one. We have to deal with this.
Okay, but I think we should pull an Endgame, go back in time, retroactively give this entire category to Spider-Verse, which is not even nominated, but you're making the rules, so why not?
Well, listen, yep, right?
If
we look at that original list, Ant-Man, Civil War, Wonder Woman, Infinity War, Endgame, Birds of Prey, is the one that stands out there that you would go, right, if we wanted to pit them against Spider-Verse now, what's the one?
I would still go with Infinity War, you know.
Like,
I loved it.
I still think, like, you know, and I know that, you know, Joe vehemently disagrees with this, but Civil War is still top of my MCU rankings. But as much as I love that film, it doesn't come close to Spider-Verse. It's not in the same league.
I agree. Into the Spider-Verse should win this category. Like, I love Infinity War. I will always love Infinity War. But Into the Spider-Verse is undoubtedly the better film out of... Like, none of these films can compete with it.
Who was pitching the Spider-Verse then on that year, on that podcast? Was it you,
that
or Joey?
That would have been Seb.
Yeah, it was Seb.
So he was always the wisest of you guys.
So I'm okay with picking Spider-Verse, but only if, Joey, you go back and you find a clip of James arguing that it shouldn't be Spider-Verse directly. You put that now and you play it.
Listen, I still think the best clip to dig out would be when we first discussed the trailer and James just wrote it off and was like, no, this looks bad.
That's for kids. It's cartoons.
Please post that on Twitter.
All I said at the time was that the trailer didn't excite me. I made no judgment about the film that was coming.
I definitely want to listen to this. Oh,
I mean, if anyone wants to go back and pick any episode at random, you are guaranteed that we've said something equally stupid. Well, I can't even remember what I think about these movies now. I'm like, I'm gonna say something on this episode that someone's gonna guarantee be able to go, you had the opposite opinion when you covered that on the show. Mm. I mean, we did Age of Ultron fairly early on, and I think that my opinion on that film has flip-flopped like 5 times since we recorded it, and I couldn't honestly tell you what I thought of it the first time. I probably didn't engage with any of the interesting stuff, and guarantee.
I think I can tell you what you thought of it, Joe. I think you looked on Twitter and saw the tweets from this guy called a Wonder Woman telling that Age of Ultron is actually very, very good and might even be better than the first one.
See, I've never flip flopped that far, but I think I did enjoy it the first time around. Okay, so are we going to go? We're going to go full on. Like Berserker straight away and just say, we were idiots, we got it wrong, we're getting the Infinity Gauntlet, we're going back in time, and we're destroying Infinity War as a winner. Listen, the events of that movie were written out of existence, and now too, so has that movie winning this award.
I was going to say, that Infinity War had the best moment of 2018, but then I considered Spider-Verse's What's Up Danger moment.
Yep.
Am I prepared to say that that moment is better than Bring Me Thanos is the question? I don't know, because I love Bring Me Thanos with a passion, as some of you guys may know. The fact that it's even a discussion should, you know, underline how awesome both of those scenes are. My goodness. I don't know. It's very, very tough.
Well, listen, I mean, we're not counting for best moments.
So. Yeah, we don't have a best moment award, so I'll let you...
What is this, the VMAs?
Well, I mean, some of these awards, yes, it's not far off. okay, next category. So we are giving it to Into the Spider-Verse. It's yes. Done. It is decided. Next category is best song. Which has had some fun choices over the years. Caroline, you'd be thrilled to know that this year we selected 3 Small Words from Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
Last year we went for It's Been a Long, Long Time, which is the song that plays over the Cap and Peggy dance at the end of Endgame. The year before that we went for Spidey Bells from Into the Spider-Verse.
What?
which is the better one, Alan?
What's Up Danger, Sunflower, like as much as I love Spidey Bells, come on, the better tracks on that soundtrack.
I mean, you've got Chris Pine going full Shatner.
I'm not saying it's bad. I really enjoy it. I'm going to play it in a couple of days when Christmas comes around, but still.
The category that year, I think, was pretty heavily Into the Spider-Verse. The year before that, we went for Star Spangled Man from Captain America the First Avenger. The year before that, we went for Black Sheep from Scott Pilgrim. And the first year we went for... that can't have been the first year. Maybe it was. We went for Running Home to You from The Flash.
Okay.
I think I've got those two the wrong way around. I think Black Sheep was year one and Running Home to You was year two.
This is a weird category.
Strong category. Really?
It's always a weird category, Reese, but it's the category that allows us to play in a clip. So it's a great edit. It's normally a great edit point halfway through.
I see.
Who's feeling passionate? Mike, have you got any there?
Yeah.
Three Small Words, a great song, and if Josie and the Pussycats is going to win anything this year, it should be something like that. However, you know, Star Spangled Man and Black Sheep, like the two like almost polar opposites of what counts as a great song in a film, right there. And now Black Sheep is finally having its moment where they're fine. What are they really finally releasing? The version that's in the film on the new re-release?
Yeah, and the soundtrack? Soundtrack, yeah.
It's Star Spangled Man for me.
I mean, I can't argue with that.
I mean, James and Mike lost me for a second there, because I'll be honest, when I watch Scott Pilgrim, I'm like, which one is Black Sheep?
The one where they say Black Sheep over and over again.
Yeah, like, the song that Envy sings.
I just remember, like, I was like, I'll let you guys decide this. I don't know.
So Black Sheep is it was written by Metric and performed by Brie Larson in the film. That version hasn't been released, but it's on the new soundtrack, as Mike says.
Right.
I still listen to that. Like, that's on rotation even now. That's the only one of these songs I would listen to properly, with the possible exception of Spidey Bells.
I would say it's the only one on my list, on this list, that is not in my Spotify, like, loop.
Listen, there's no accounting for taste, Joe.
The Scott Pilgrim soundtrack for me, I loved that movie so much, but the soundtrack I loved even more. That was completely in my rotation, every single song for maybe 6 months. Black Sheep of this list, that would be my choice as well. Okay. Love that song.
We might have to put this one to a vote. So Greece is saying Black Sheep. Amon is saying Star Spangled Man. Mike, you seem caught in two minds here.
No, Josie and the Pussycats, actually.
Oh, you chose Josie and the Pussycats. Okay, we've got three.
Shit, he's
low-key.
This is like, okay, it's actually physically painful for me to vote against Josie and the Pussycats, my number one love. But I do feel like, for the purposes of this podcast, like, Star Spangled Man feels like it really represents the spirit of this podcast. So with all the love to Josie, I think I'm going to put my vote to Star Spangled Man.
Okay, and James, where would you be voting?
Black Sheep.
Okay, well, I would go Star Spangled Man as well.
I'm changing my vote. Dramatic. I think that's right. You know, Black Sheep's a really nice song, but in a comic book movie. But Star Spangled Man is a better choice for the number one song for all comic book movies as a single song.
I'm happy with that. Yeah.
That's
fair. That sequence in that film is just gorgeous as well. Like,
that's as good as that film gets.
There is the moment where Peggy goes to grab the abs, James. You've got to remember that. And also the other 2 hours of the movie is all pretty great.
I think Star Spangled Man is the high point of the film, and then after that it's just pretty much by the numbers. But
trash.
James, why must you be James?
That's his brand.
Can I just, I think when I selected this the first time, it was, we had no other competition, and James has said, just went, whatever the fuck you want, I don't care. Running Home to You in The Flash is really sweet. I don't know, Caroline, were you still watching The Flash?
Yeah, I was, but that would not be my pick from that.
Do you like Super Friends?
Yeah, 100%. I watch that like once a week when I just need to pick me up. I find that so heartening. Yeah. I think, that would be my pick from that episode.
That Flash musical episode, for anyone who hasn't seen it, has, I think half of the tracks are written by the La La Land duo, they did Running Home to You. And then Rachel Bloom, who did Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, wrote Super Friends and maybe one of the others, Caroline, I can't remember. And
I think just those two, and then the other ones were all covers.
And it's delightful, right? It's a really fun episode. And I would highly recommend people tracking down that music on Spotify. It's fun. Okay, but we're picking Star Spangled Man. I think we're right. It's original superhero music as well, which I like. It's rather than just a track that is great in the film. Okay, and it's Christmas, so you can listen to Spidey Bells as well. Right, okay. One of our made-up awards here that you don't get on other shows. Best villain. Let's start off with best villain, because that's the more fun category, right?
Oh, no.
This year, we... what we said to ourselves is, if we were being honest, it would be the T-1000, Robert Patrick in Terminator 2. But it's not a superhero movie, so James made the wild card choice of... Mr. Freeze in Batman and Robin.
Wait, wow. Not Poison Ivy in Batman and Robin?
Mm. Not Dr. Morris Robotnik? Would be better.
Robotnik was discussed.
not enough.
I was making the case for Nick Nolte in Hulk, but that also. So, but we went for Mr. Freeze because whoever we chose,
we needed someone. No one from this year is going to win, so it doesn't matter. Yeah.
So previous villains that were the best villains of the year: Agent Smith from The Matrix, Killmonger from Black Panther, General Zod from Superman 2, Dr. Octopus from Spider-Man 2, and Kingpin from Daredevil Season 1.
Very strong category.
I have an immediate standout though, and that is Dr. Octopus.
Same.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got a different one. So, guys, between you, make the Dr. Octopus case, and then I'm going to mount a rebuttal.
So, it's an iconic villain who had never been done, never been done on screen in live action before.
That was the second movie.
Yeah, but no previous Spider-Man TV series.
Never been done. Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
I think they got every aspect of the character right, which is that they made him menacing, but you also cared about him. The effects were great. When he was announced as coming back for the new Spider-Man film, I could not have been happier with any previous villain choice. Certainly not Electro.
Who is not on this?
Too tall, too skinny, not fat enough. Doc Ock should be like more bulbous.
Nah, I was happy with it.
That's my hot take. That's the scolding hot take.
Not exactly Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, was it?
Caroline, Mike, you agreed on Doc Ock, so why were you nodding along?
Yeah, well, everything James said, and I also feel like Alfred Molina really set a template for the modern day, sympathetic villain in a live action superhero property, right? That to me was just early icon that all these years later, I feel like is just as compelling. And like you said, I was super excited to see him announced again. So I feel like a good representative of this whole category. That's going to be my argument for everything. If I feel like I'm losing, I'll say it represents the genre as a whole, so it should win.
I'm going to go with Killmonger. Because some of the ideas that some of the themes of Black Panther for which he is a vessel for in terms of what is being discussed, I think is still game changing. To this day, when I think about Killmonger's final line and the fact that it's in a Disney Marvel movie, it's pretty insane. And in addition to all of that, he makes me want to go to the gym. Which I can't have a love-hate relationship with. But there you go.
Killmonger's the sexiest villain on this list.
A good reason to choose.
That's not the category name, Amon. That's the next category. Sexiest villain is actually the next.
Yeah, that's next.
Apparently, it's just best villain.
So, I was gonna say Killmonger as well. Obviously, Kingpin has a very special place in my heart. And, you know, if he is not in the next Spider-Man movie, then they're doing something wrong. But we've, Killmonger, I think what I really love about Killmonger as a villain is, Ryan Coogler has talked about this, right? That he kind of started off by writing the villain and going, if I kind of put all of my thoughts and frustrations and kind of the things that I kind of ultimately believe and then put them into a villain character and see how that plays out, how interesting is that going to be? And I think that's why you end up, you at least up until the third act of Black Panther, you're sat there going, do I
agree with him?
Do I agree with the bad guy here?
Was he just hot?
Yeah, or is it, and it turns out no, and he's hot. And I think that's a really compelling angle to have on a villain, to have literally the storyteller kind of buy into that, and still still have you at the end of the movie just about rooting for the hero. But there's a reason why that death at the end of Black Panther hits hard as much as it does, because when he spits out that final line, you go, yeah, I still kind of get it.
But that fight by the train is really lame. It looks crap. And every single fight in Spider-Man 2 Every single fight between the two of them in Spider-Man 2 is so cool.
If it's we're
so,
just
it's perfect.
If we're just doing train fights.
Yes. That's two categories now. Yeah. Next category sex is within the third category is best villain fight on a train. Both in Superstar.
Right, I'm just going to pause for a second because I think we have been joined by our seventh guest. Al Kennedy, thank you for joining us.
Hello. Oh. I forgot to unmute my microphone there. Hello, everyone.
It's a dramatic Hello. Entrance, Al.
Yeah, just in the shadows lurking.
Al, I know that we've interacted on Twitter before, but this is the first time I think I've actually ever seen you. So hello.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken before because we did the Defenders.
Oh yes. Wow!
Yeah. Wow!
Good memory.
What a throwback!
One of the darkest hours in superhero movie and TV history.
It wasn't that bad. It had its moments.
It was worse than Iron Fist.
No,
it was worse than Iron Fist.
Defenders was worse than Iron Fist. Get the hell out of here! There's no way. Nothing is worse than Iron Fist except for maybe what's space in Human Season 1. Maybe that.
Oh, wait, you know,
I like that you had to clarify it was Season 1 of Inhumans.
They might still running. Make a second.
Hashtag Soviet
Humans. Not Al, you join us as we are arguing over who is the best villain that we've ever given an award to on this podcast. So the list of villains that we had were, I'm not going to explain the context again, but we had Mr. Freeze, and then we had Agent Smith, Killmonger, General Zod, Dr. Octopus, and Kingpin. And we think we are ultimately arguing between Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2 and Killmonger in Black Panther. Do you have any strong feelings either way there?
I think that's pretty much where I would go as well. I mean, are we talking Kingpin? Which Kingpin, I guess?
D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio,
he kind of... I think he gets sullied by the third season. I know we gave him it for the first season, but his return is just not as good.
See, I'm thinking about whether it's going to be D'Onofrio. That does make me pause. And that in turn makes me think of D'Onofrio. So,
sugar, water. That would be fun if you did that as Kingpin. That was the missing fourth season. Oh, we were robbed. We were robbed.
Reese, that
we
performance.
Were robbed, Reese.
That performance was a nominee on a separate podcast. There, I think we did go for what's his name? Something Bug.
Bug dude.
Edgar Bug.
Edgar Bug. Yeah.
Sure.
Do we need to put this to a vote? Who had Dr. Octopus?
Yeah.
And we've got
I'll go for that.
Three votes for Dr. Octopus. Killmonger?
I think we've got four.
Oh, we got four. Oh yeah. I thought Reese was just scratching his head.
What if can we have anarchy and just give it to them both? Clearly I just want to blow up the entire structure.
Absolute anarchist Carolina.
You know, it's a weird year. Why don't we have two? Why don't we spread the love?
Why don't we know winners? Why don't we stop the podcast now? Anarchy. This is over. All superhero movies are bad and this is cancelled.
We should have an early representative of the first phase of superhero movies and a representative of the second phase of superhero movies.
I think you're speaking about like we're going to put them in a capsule and shoot them into space. Which it would be fun if we could get the budget for that. That would be.
I'll see what Patreon can do.
2020 has had enough villains as it is.
Fair.
I mean, and Caroline, you did vote for Dr. Octopus, and your vote essentially carries the vote.
Listen, I love Killmonger too, but Dr. Octopus.
Okay.
He's gotta have it.
I'm mad at it.
Amon's furious. Okay, so we'll give it to Dr. Octopus, and we will move on. Let's go to best screenplay. So this is always tricky because we're not normally looking out for the screenplays in these movies. We just want to see, you know, which villains are sexy and
who's got the longest cape.
So for best screenplay for this year, we selected Birds of Prey. And we add that to a list which includes Adam's Family Values, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Iron Man 3, Ghost World, and Kick-Ass.
Spider-Verse. Next. Nah, it is the best screenplay of the lot. The everything it manages to talk about in such an effective, powerful way, I think is just exceptional. All the themes which are beautifully set up and developed all the way through, and then has that amazing payoff in the final act in like 3, 4, 5 amazing different ways. It's a special movie. I don't think any, as much as I love some of the other films which you mentioned there, I don't think anything comes close to Spider-Verse. Though.
Funny thing is, we would have given Spider-Verse the best new film award, even though it wasn't voted, on it on the year. So is this the award, like the Oscars do, right? This is the award to sort of spread the love a little bit and give it to Iron Man 3? Even though I agree with you, Spider-Verse is probably the best screenplay, but, give it to number 2 just to...
Well, so I don't know if I do the degree of difficulty in terms of what Shane Black and Drew Pearce pulled off with Iron Man 3, given the stuff that we know was going on behind the scenes and the way that the kind of the original villain of that movie got kind of, just kneecapped.
The original villain of that movie is Ike Perlmutter.
I mean, well, that is the point. Would Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse have been good if Ike Perlmutter had been vetoing things? And I would say no, because it wouldn't have had Miles Morales in it.
Yeah, that's the point. That's exactly right. Yeah.
It wouldn't have had a female villain, because you couldn't have had your Dr. Octopus there.
Because toys, Joe. Toys.
To be fair, toys are cool.
Yeah, and all of us have our Aldrich Killian toys at home.
Yeah, right.
the zoom angle doesn't. It's in the other corner here. It is there, but it's sorry. My desk doesn't know. It's huge. It's actually as big as the room. It's absolutely massive.
I've got the variant from him at the start of the movie. It plays Eiffel 65.
Oh, you've got the variant.
Stood on a roof on his
cool.
own.
Jealous.
That screenplay's great. I mean, the dialogue in that screenplay's great. And I think it's got a really smart undercurrent. The angle that it chooses to explore with Tony Stark's PTSD, and then framing an Iron Man movie, which is, to be fair, why a lot of people hate it. But framing an Iron Man movie around what if Iron Man's having kind of like an identity crisis, and we just make him not Iron Man and try and figure out if Tony Stark kind of still exists. What is the dichotomy between this superhero and his alter ego?
Yeah, it's just what Cap said in Avengers. Take away the suit, who are you?
Yeah, playboy philanthropist.
Yeah, exactly.
Kevin McAllister, grown up. make him talk.
But it's one of the central questions in Iron Man 3 is, well, what is he without the suit? We take the suit away from Tony for long periods of Iron Man 3.
And then they slowly build it back up.
Yeah.
It's a very smart script.
Yeah.
Great film.
I just say that I think the things that don't work about it are outside of the script's control, almost. And also, it's got that reveal in the middle that, did anyone here see that coming when they saw the movie for the first time?
Yeah. No, but as I've spoken about this before, it's probably going to get people mad at me all over again. But I appreciated the fact that I was surprised by the reveal. To do that in a blockbuster of that size is not easy, and that it was impressive on that level. I just didn't like what the twist actually was, and it did take me out of the movie.
You'll be able to cope with that after Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, and we'll have covered it all, the real Mandarin or whatever, and it will be fine, and Travis Slattery will be able to be
Spider-Verse does do a similar version of that twist, right?
What? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Well, Spider-Verse has
Octavia.
What's her name? Octavia, yeah.
It's the flip of the twist, right? It's in Iron Man 3, it's the main villain turns out to be a normal person in verse, it's the reverse. Mm-hmm.
And you don't see it coming.
Yeah, well, no, one twist so is a lot better than the other.
I think this would have been a much harder category if you guys had nominated Josie and the Pussycats for this. I actually do think that is a great screenplay, but But as much as I love Iron Man 3, I'm inclined to agree with Spider-Verse. Because I think the mix of everything Amon said in terms of the themes, but also how funny it is, and to be able to do both, be able to be that smart and thoughtful and moving, but also that funny, is a really hard thing to pull off.
Because I think also with Spider-Verse, what's amazing about it is that they got the core of Spider-Man so perfect, and they distilled all the Spider-Man attributes into like a 2-hour film. And you know, we've heard in other Spider-Man movies and in other comics how, you know, Spider-Man doesn't have to be Peter Parker, you can be the Mask. We've heard all those messages before. We haven't really seen them visualized and, you know, packaged in the way that Spider-Verse does it.
Same is true of Iron Man 3, though, right? Which is that they kind of distill who Tony Stark is and remove the Iron Man suit to get there. So I agree with you, but I think Iron Man 2 is doing the same trick a little bit. You know, Spider-Verse is saying, what is Spider-Man without Peter Parker? And Iron Man 3 is saying, what is Tony Stark without the Iron Man suit? So,
Mike, what's your...
I'm trying to think back. Why didn't Black Panther win this in 2018? Because it was
against Spider-Verse.
But we talk so much about, you know, just then, Amon, you were saying, Killmonger is a vessel for the theme of the movie. All these ideas are in the screenplay. Part of the power of Spider-Verse is in the direction, in the animation, in the everything, the moments and the music. I'm more leaning on the side of Iron Man 3 in this sort of duo here we've got going on. But I think everything that I respond to about Black Panther, performances aside, of course, the ideas that are there from page one of the screenplay. And we talk so much about how, you know, the train scene in the screenplay can just be like, you know, half a page.
They fight.
You can skip that quite easily and just get back to the final lines, as you say.
I think one of the things about Spider-Verse as well is that it does have a fantastic script, but so much of the power of Spider-Verse comes from the interaction of half dozen different things within the film. So, I mean, one of them obviously is the animation is groundbreaking in its techniques. The acting is spectacular. The script is really great. The music is sensational, the way that it's used in the film. So, so good. Which makes me wonder why we're not talking about the actual best screenplay in this list, which is obviously Adam's Family Values.
I'm glad you didn't pivot to Kick-Ass there, because I did reread this list and go...
I had forgotten Kick-Ass, it was even nominated.
When you were saying, you know, that this shows what superheroes are, and I'm like, this shows what superheroes are for 13-year-old boys who've just hit puberty.
Iron Man 3 is what is Tony Stark without the Iron Man suit. Spider-Verse is what is Spider-Man without Peter Parker. Kick-Ass is what is superhero movies without any quality control whatsoever.
What if you just went out there and started twatting people? Would you be a superhero? That's the question of Kick-Ass.
I also think Ghost World is great, but I think we should have a brief opportunity for Al to argue the case for Adam's Family Values, which is
phenomenal.
It's a miracle of a movie.
Yeah, especially considering the first.
Which is fine, but first to take that much of a step up for the sequel.
First, Adam's Family is a good film, but again, it's a film which is very much elevated by its performances. Particularly Rahulia just carries the first film. But in the second film, you retain those incredible performances. You add Joan Cusack's unbelievable performance as Debbie. She's so incredible in that film. And then every time you pause for a second, there is a quiet little one-liner being slid in that is, you know, things like, even when, I can't remember what the character's name is, but Mercedes McNabb's character.
The girl at the summer camp.
Yeah. And she's like, I'll be the victim. And then Wednesday's like, all your life. All those kinds of things. The fact that you can have actors of the quality of Christine Baranski and Peter McNichol and people like that, who, you know, they're solid players in any ensemble, but in this, every single one of them is given the chance to do something memorable. And just the ease, the sharpness, the way that it just slides in like a knife, this incredibly honed script without any apparent effort whatsoever, to do something that looks that effortless is incredibly difficult. And I could watch Adam's Family Values every day and twice on Sundays.
So the only thing I think counts against Adam's Family Values is that it, to me, it is just a very good comedy, whereas the other ones feel like they have things to actually say. And I love Adam's Family Values, but it does seem, you know, shallow in terms of its themes and ideas. It's not really checking in.
What about Debbie, though? That wasn't her. She was a ballerina, graceful, elegant.
I love it. But I
wanted
Iron Man 3 and Spider-Verse are saying a lot more with the time they've got.
I wanted Al to be able to have the opportunity to argue for it, because I just didn't expect anyone else to vote with him.
He's convinced me. He's got my vote.
Really?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we've got two Adams Family votes.
We've got a breakaway faction.
Mike has gone completely off piste and has gone Black Panther.
Iron Man 3, out of these contenders, even with Shane Black copying, you know, Control C, Control V-ing Christmas and Kid Sidekick and all this stuff from the earlier soundtrack.
We know Amon has got Spider-Verse. I've got Iron Man 3. So Caroline and James, where are you leaning?
I'm going to stick Spider-Verse.
Oh, so James has a deciding vote, I think.
I can't not choose Iron Man 3.
Great.
It remains one of my favorite Marvel films.
Excellent. Okay, so best screenplay goes to Iron Man 3.
What about Debbie?
Okay, I feel like we've disappointed Amon a couple of times in a row now, so I'm going to move over to best score.
So we can really disappoint him.
with our lack of comparative knowledge. So, Amon, you'll be happy to know that for this year we selected best score of Superman Returns. In previous years, now I don't think we did this on the first year of the podcast, so in previous years we have Supergirl, The Dark Knight, Thor Ragnarok, and The Flash. And I want you to take this opportunity to tell us where we've got it wrong each and every year.
Hold on. 2018, what film did you have?
The Dark Knight.
No, 2018, not 2008.
No, so but that it was from the films we covered in 2018. So the Dark Knight.
Come on, this whole award setup is nonsense. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
So the Dark Knight beat Black Panther and Spider-Verse.
See, oh God. As much as I love the score for the Dark Knight, it's not better than the score for Black Panther. So you went wrong there.
Just remember here, Ramon, that we don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Dark Knight score is one of the most influential movie scores, you know, ever. You know, so maybe quality aside, but that is a very important movie score.
I love the Dark Knight score. Right? Like I love, like it's incredible. I love how Zimmer built on the themes he established in Batman Begins. I love James Newton Howard's work with the Harvey Two-Face scores. I think that's very, very good. I think Like a Dog Chasing Cars is one of my favourite scores and my favourite tracks on the entire trilogy. Oh, no,
he knows all the names of the
just
songs.
Just let him go.
Sorry, I thought I was... this is a mistake. I'm bored. He knows the name of the songs!
You you come at a king, you best come correct.
I hereby resign from the podcast. Goodbye.
And also, I mean, even I would say, as a total rube here, like, it probably wouldn't be like in my top two or three Hans Zimmer scores. So
yeah.
So that's what the argument against it is. So Amon, why don't you just tell us, you know, if you were picking like your top three superhero scores of all time, what would they be?
Ooh, wow. Well, Black Panther would definitely be in there.
How does that one go? Can you tell us a bit?
Yeah,
I remember it now.
Don't let's turn this into that bit in Only Connect that everyone mutes.
The cringe bit.
If we're talking about superhero scores, we have to talk about the superhero score by which all other superhero scores are measured. I am, of course, talking about John Williams' original Superman score.
Which, to be fair to us, I think was in the first year of the podcast where we didn't give this award. So let's retroactively say that we would have done.
So is that why Spider-Man, Batman and Superman aren't in here? Because you did that in the first year?
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's correct though. I think we did all of those.
Yeah, yeah. We did all of those.
It's also and it's also why the Ben Affleck Daredevil isn't in here.
Yeah. I can't believe that wasn't a nominee for best song.
Oh, what, Evanescence?
Yeah. You go back and redo that category.
If we're looking at the scores of those three, the sort of the iconic scores of those three characters, then Elfman's Spider-Man theme, we have to recognize as well that that theme is basically a straight lift from Sesame Street's Captain Vegetable song. Is I Captain Vegetable
adding
carrot and my celery.
Just going to add tab to my browser so I can watch that afterwards.
Right, see, this is a tricky thing, because if we're talking about the best overall score, then the discussion gets very, you know, tricky. If we're talking about the best theme, then we got, I said Black Panther, I said Superman. The other best theme, I will put the Avengers in there, because the way that theme has evolved and really become part of the popular culture discourse since 2012 is really special. And the way in which, you know, they finally sort of caught on to that fact from 2018 onwards, or from 2017 onwards, when you first started seeing the first trailers for Avengers Infinity War, and how they really put that theme in the foreground, and what it's come to represent in both Endgame and Infinity War, the Avengers and also the Street theme has to be there. So of those three...
best score. It's
best theme. But if it's best score... Remind me of the nominees again.
The ones that you've just named. The nominees are irrelevant at this point.
We're letting you take control of this category, yeah. I think, is the vibe.
So it sounds like you're saying, is it Superman? Is it Black Panther? Or is it Avengers? And I can see Mike on the screen to your right as well thinking, or is it Batman?
I love Elfman's Batman. I think it's great. But I can't, I mean, if John Williams is in this category and if Superman is the thing that John Williams is in the category for, then I would hate myself. I would go to sleep just like what were you thinking, Amon, if I don't say John Williams Superman. It is, as I say, the standard by which all other superhero scores, super themes are measured. It is incredible. And the fact that he did that not only in the midst of an incredible career where, like, on the other side of that, he was doing iconic scores, just coming out with the themes that we'll be listening to, that we have listened to for decades since he created them, that we'll be listening to for however many decades after. But the fact that he did that when the superhero genre wasn't really a thing, like, we didn't really know what a superhero score could be at that point. John Williams created that blueprint, and he did it for nothing. I mean, it's just insane. it has to be John Williams.
It's a solid argument.
As much
I know, I'm convinced.
And you know, that's what we would have given the award to in 2015 or whenever it was anyway. So yeah, we were right then. I just love that this podcast started off, we were like, we're not even doing that category. Then Amon came on and changed it all. So okay, the winner for best score is Superman, John Williams.
Assuming no one dissents. Does anyone dissent?
No.
Is anyone brave enough? Okay, I'm going to pick one of these silly categories now that we can hopefully blast through, which is best couple. To my chagrin, the best couple in superhero movie history never got a win in this category. So instead, the winners that we do have to choose from, this year James and I selected Harley Quinn and her sandwich from Birds of Prey. We also have Morticia and Gomez Adams. We have Eddie and Venom from Venom.
Oh my God.
We have Wade and Vanessa from the first Deadpool. Nope. Definitely not from the second Deadpool. Tony and Pepper, I think that was from Iron Man 2. Probably. And the first Avengers, actually, which I think we covered in the same year. And then Bob and Helen Parr from The Incredibles won in our first year.
What a category.
But I'm hoping, and my argument that the best couple ever is Steve and Peggy. That we just every year overlooked because apparently someone was better. So, I'm looking it up.
Listen, Joe, we don't give awards on this episode to things that haven't won this award in the past. We haven't done that. We've already done that twice.
No precedent.
Also, Joe, your sound was breaking up a little bit there. It sounded like you didn't say Steve and Bucky.
I think you mean Steve and Sam. I don't know what this is.
You mean Steve and Agent 13.
Oh my God.
No, it's got me between two characters.
I am disqualifying Wade and Vanessa on the basis that Deadpool 2 pissed me off so much.
Yep.
I'm taking it out on Deadpool 1. Because of what they did in Deadpool 2, which is just really ticked me off. So
can I very quickly disqualify Bob and Helen Parr on the basis that Helen has more chemistry with Catherine Keener's character in The Incredibles 2 than she ever does with Bob.
isn't that a modern marriage? There's a truthness there, right? That gets to the core relationship that they have.
The only couple out of that entire list that would ever make me hashtag a tweet couple goals is absolutely Gomez and Morticia.
Yes,
I'm fully there with that. Yeah.
They are absolutely just bananas for each other, and there's no contest. Really
enthusiastically and vocally and like unwaveringly they are into each other, and that is to be respected and possibly feared.
And the only competition that I can actually see is Tony and Pepper, and they kind of split up for contractual reasons before reuniting. So does anyone disagree with Morticia and Gomez?
He did.
Yes, it is done now. So Morticia and Gomez, any dissent there?
Nope. I just feel like we should give a shout out to the unnominated couples, including of course Clark and Lois, which I feel like would normally be considered in the category like this. And then
I don't know how that didn't win in year one. Apparently that's when we gave it to The Incredibles.
And then Peter Parker and Mary Jane, particularly the Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst version, I really love.
I'm on board with that, but Seb and James were always anti Kiki on this podcast.
Look, everyone can be wrong sometimes, so.
If we're just giving it to random things that never got nominated, then Scott and Ramona as well.
Yeah, I think
Scott and Ramona didn't win, but they were definitely in the list.
And I think probably the way that movie fudges the kind of the resolution of the characters is maybe an argument against that we made at the time, or I made
Edgar
at the time.
Wright film that backs away from doing a satisfying emotional resolution for a romantic situation.
Edgar Wright, woman. okay, so the best couple goes to Morticia and Gomez Adams. let's go to another one of the big awards now, and we'll go for Best Supporting Actress. Now, for this year, purely on the basis that James hadn't seen Josie and the Pussycats and couldn't vote for Tara Reid, we went for Jennifer Connelly from Hulk as a movie that we had both seen.
So,
the nominees from...
Carla is not happy.
Carla is furious.
This is the year of Birds of Prey, and you went with Jennifer Connelly in the Hulk?
Like, no.
Yeah, there was a split vote for Birds of Prey, so we just... And again, Caroline, we felt... When there was any conflict, it was easier just to write off the winner from this year completely.
Yeah, fair enough.
So in previous years, the winners have been Christina Ricci for Adam's Family and Adam's Family Values, Letitia Wright for Black Panther, Scarlett Johansson for The First Avengers, Tilda Swinton for Doctor Strange, and Chloe Moretz for Kick-Ass. Famously, a really difficult category every year because superhero movies for a long time just didn't have many... real good female supporting roles. It would be, you know, you'd have your female lead who's the love interest, and then after that, well, I don't know.
I don't want to vote for a lot of people in this category on the basis of a lot of different stuff.
Their actual like real life.
So we've got
Letitia.
Letitia Wright. Letitia Wright.
She's had a fall from grace recently. I don't. As much as she was good as in Doctor Strange, the whole whether she should have been cast in the first place is the whole thing holding me back from Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, we had that argument at the time, I think.
Yeah. What were some of the other people nominated?
I think Chloe Grace Moretz. I'll stomp for Chloe. I mean, that is a star-making performance, right? Like she has a career from that one movie. It was kind of a bit of a poison chalice role in other people's hands, and she's made a career basically off of that. I mean, she's fun in it, and it's movie has its faults, but like she's not one of them. And I'd go for her.
Mike, you gestured to camera there in a way that said you either really agree or really disagree.
Please agree.
I don't think I can stand by and let Kick-Ass win in a category where there's an Adams Family nomination. Christina Ricci, you talk about star making performance, you know, that they didn't
that is a fair point.
Ricci, I know, but I'll just take the I'll be the nerd in the Zoom and say I just feel like I just don't think we can give two of these awards to Adam's Family movies. That, you know, they're not I just feel like, I know it is a comic book, yes, but don't you feel like we should
it was a comic strip.
Hang on, so in preference you're gonna go with Kick-Ass.
Is it gonna?
You can see if it was like Spider-Verse, of course.
Well, to go back to actors who maybe I don't love in like their real life persona, but I really appreciate their on-screen work, I would stump for ScarJo as Black Widow. I think that's a real, like, that character has maybe never gotten her due on the script, maybe apart from the first Avengers, but I think Scarlett Johansson has brought like a huge consistent through line across all of the films, and I think it's that, like, that's a character that I feel like I can personally really track the arc she's gone on, even if the films have maybe lost track of it at times, and I think a lot of that is due to her performance. I would stump for her in this category.
And that nomination is specifically for the Avengers.
Her supporting roles,
for her supporting role in the Avengers. And I think the scene that she has with Loki in the glass prison is, I think that's her best scene in the MCU. And
Her best scene is when she tearfully takes a bite of a peanut butter sandwich in Avengers Endgame, which I do think is the moment of that film.
It is great.
She's allergic. It's my meta narrative.
But there's also the sequence in the Avengers, obviously, with Hulk when you know he hulks out on the helicarrier, and I just think that's kind of the when people talk about strong female characters and don't really know what they mean in a positive way, I think that's the epitome of that, where she is like completely fucking incredible as a superhero in that sequence with no powers, but is also showing, you know, kind of emotional vulnerability that male characters are allowed to show, and that the female ones tend to shy away from, because it's like, no, you have to be the strong female character archetype rather than yet this person would be fucking terrified of being on a helicarrier with a Hulk because she's a human being. She's about to get chased by a Hulk through a helicarrier. She would be my choice. But I see the arguments for Richie and Moretz.
I'm changing my vote. I vote for ScarJo. I've been convinced. I'm changing my vote.
I don't want to sound like I'm in the pocket of Big Adam's family here, having stand for it on every category so far. But
that Sonnenfeld money is coming in fast.
Exactly. It's just if he promised me that if I just fought for it in every category, he'd bring back another season of Series of Unfortunate Events. So, but the scene in for me for. With Richie, it all comes down to the scene in Adam's Family Values where she has to pretend to have undergone this Road to Damascus experience.
Mm-hmm.
And as the camera moves slowly in on her face and she smiles and the smile creeps slowly across her face and the whole of the rest of her face is on full red alert panic mode. The eyebrows are going up and down. The eyes are just like, what's going on here? She's just hating every second of it. And the terror that is in her face everywhere except for her mouth. I mean, she should have won an Oscar for that. Not that specific 5 seconds.
I mean,
I'm changing my vote. I'm changing my vote again!
Right, who do we not know where they're going? Amon, what was your vote for?
I didn't really have a vote, but you guys are really going to try and make me vote for Scarlett Johansson, aren't you?
No, I mean, if you don't feel passionately, you can just sit back and let everyone else decide.
No. I will make my voice count.
Vote of suppression, Joey. Vote of suppression!
Stop the count.
Honestly, I was going to agree with Reese and then he went and changed his vote. Twice. So, you know, if we're talking about performance alone, then, you know, you made a very good argument for Scarlett Johansson. She's very good in that movie. And I think a lot about the scenes which stand out for me in that movie, and a lot of them have to do with Scarlett Johansson, not only the scene with Loki, but even her introductory scene, I think, is very, very good. And she gets a lot of really great character work in that movie, especially. I don't think, at least until sort of Endgame, we sort of see that amount of attention paid to Natasha again. Obviously, we're going to get a whole load of that in Black Widow whenever we finally get to see the movie. But I would say she's only got one other MVP, and that is the Winter Soldier. Avengers is a close second. So I'm going to vote for Scarlett Tree Johansson.
Okay, so the way that I think we've got 3 votes for ScarJo, and if Reese switched on to Christina Ricci...
No, I changed my vote again. It's Jennifer Connelly's.
I'm going to let James... James is now the deciding vote.
No.
Are you going Ricci or ScarJo?
I've been agonising over this silently in the background. I agree. I agree with Al. I think Christina Ricci is phenomenal in that movie. What it comes down to for me is that I think if you tried to take ScarJo out of Avengers specifically, the whole film would just come unstitched. Like, she needs to be in there for that film to work. And I think there's a potential version of Adam's Family Value where Christina Ricci isn't in it and the film still works.
Well, I mean, she kind of is just in her own side of it anyway.
She's exactly.
Just, it's a film with two plots.
Yeah.
And I love her performance and I love her story.
On a technicality, she's the lead actress in her plot.
Right. But,
so category fraud, we're disqualifying Christina Ricci. Scarlett Johansson is the winner. And we move on because otherwise we're going to be here all night. Right, we're going to move on to one of my favourite awards now. Now, I don't know whether this is going to be fast because one of the winners the award is literally named after. Hmm. This is the Howard T. Duck Award for Best Worst Movie. so this year, I I was reliably informed by James that the winner should be Bloodshot. So Bloodshot was the winner this year. James was furious last year when we gave this award to Alita. Alita was the winner last year.
Absolute.
And then
I'd forgotten the
previous winners before that were Venom, the Tim Story Fantastic Four, the Punisher, that's the Tom Jane Punisher, and Howard the Duck. So the spirit of this category is, you know, it's kind of bad when you're watching it, but you can't help but enjoy it as you're watching.
That disqualifies Venom. No enjoyment there. There was some enjoyment when, you know, Tom Hardy ravenously eats whatever's in. Is it a fish?
When he goes and loves the thing, yeah. 5 out of 5 for that moment. That's it. We're done.
That was the high point of the movie. What were some of the nominees again? Sorry.
Fantastic Four, The Punisher, Howard the Duck, Alita, Bloodshot.
Ooh. We can just cross Alita off this list. That is a good movie. That's a legit good movie. Anyone votes for that, you get cut.
I'm going to go with The Punisher. I still actually have time. There are some really great scenes in that movie. When he comes against the assassins, it's really, really fun. Like, you know, bringing a knife to a gunfight, his fight with the Russian, all of that stuff is great. John Travolta is hamming it up. That comes with its fair share of fun moments. And I like Thomas Jane's interpretation of the character. I would have liked to have seen him get another full-length crack at it. Obviously, he had that 10-minute
You're making it sound too good. You're making it sound too good for this award. That's the problem. I think the Punisher's a little bit too good. I think Alita was a little bit too good to be the definitive. I mean, Howard the Duck is a fucking travesty of a movie. It is so bad in so many ways. But my God, if your eyes are not glued to the screen for every horrifying moment of that film. The Howard T. Duck Award has to go to Howard T. Duck. And I welcome someone to argue otherwise.
I think the only film that's in with even a hint of a shout of this is Venom. Because Venom has the same thing, where it's batshit for many reasons.
Yeah.
And the performances are just confusing, if anything.
Venom's only problem, though, is it takes a long time to get to that point.
That's the problem. It
takes a solid hour of absolutely hee-haw happening, and then after that, he gets to talk to himself.
I think that's the reason why Venom works for me more than it works for anyone else, though, is that I prefer the first hour, because I'm like, what's happening here? What is this movie? it's just Tom Hardy being weird, and then the Venom stuff is great, but like, I've already had so much fun by it with how incompetent that first hour is. Yeah, my brain is broken when it comes to Venom.
I have to say, having rewatched it recently.
Why?
There was a second half to that sentence. There's a comma, and I'm introducing a second clause. Having rewatched it recently, Tim Story's Fantastic Four is better than I remembered it being. Chris Evans and Michael Chiklis really carry a lot of that film between the two of them.
When we rewatched it for the podcast, that was the conclusion we came to, is, oh, actually, this was a lot better than people remember.
Which discounts it from winning this category, right? Because it's absolutely too good. Yes.
Absolutely. Like Venom, I said, we've got a vote between Venom and Howard the Duck, as far as
I'm concerned. I haven't seen Howard the Duck, but Venom was like maybe the worst film I saw that year. Yeah. It was so awful, and even in conception, how does that movie even exist? But I kind of loved like every second of it. So I in the spirit of what I understand this award to be, for me, Venom.
So
was,
that's a vote for Venom.
Within the first 5 minutes of Howard the Duck, Howard falls through a bathroom and you see a topless female duck, and someone at Lucasfilm thought that was a good idea.
But what it's kind of point, Howard the Duck, his name is in the award, so in a way, he's already won. So you could say the Howard T. Award or Venom, because then Howard the Duck also wins and Venom wins. They both win.
It's time for everyone to vote.
Listen, I'm Duck Duck Duck.
This is what has swung the vote for me. I just remembered that the best thing about Venom is the end credits. Because we get an Eminem song, people. That's it. Yeah, I'm going Venom. That's why.
Also, let me remind you, the Venom sequel, the Venom sequel is not called Venom 2 : Carnage or Venom 2 : Infinite Carnage. The Venom sequel is Venom Let There Be Carnage, which is so stupid. That's so dumb.
Yeah, I expect it to win the award when it comes out. But...
Caroline?
If we're able to just go for films that have got rap tracks in them as being the biggest selling point for that film, then I have seen that we're allowed to do this and go completely off beast from the list. I'm going for 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Too good.
Yeah, way too good.
And I'm going for 1994's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
Yeah,
that's my time.
Bella.
I'm in a jam because I also haven't seen Howard the Duck. But I will say, you know, on the podcast feed, a lot of times when there's one when I haven't seen the movie, I'm like, okay, I'll wait to listen to that episode until I see the movie. With Howard the Duck, I immediately listen to your episode on it without having seen the movie. But to me, that implies that it should win this category because I wanted to consume it as an object beyond being a film that I wanted to see. So even having not seen it, I'm inclined to agree with Joe that the category is named after this movie. Therefore, the movie should win the category.
Okay, Mike?
Yeah, this is not the Eddie B. Rock Award. This is the Howard
Award. I'm glad you had that joke in your pocket.
That's good. He waited for his moment and he strut.
It's Howard for me as well. So I think Howard's got it, yeah.
Howard has carried it. Excellent. Okay, let's go to best costume. So this is traditionally the we sit back and let James decide award because he has very strong opinions about this. I say that we do tend to let him decide after we disqualify whatever specific mark of the Iron Man or War Machine costume he is nominated that year.
Yeah.
So based on an excellent tweet from Caroline a couple of days ago, we went for Birds of Prey, predominantly Harley Quinn, but you could probably, you know, give it for any number of characters in that movie for best costume this year. Last year we went for Mysterio in Spider-Man Far From Home. The year before that we went for Miles Morales in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Hela in Thor Ragnarok, Deadpool in the first Deadpool, and Spider-Man, which I think is the first Raimi Spider-Man. Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. Which I have always been very pro the kind of the textured bumpiness of that costume, but I know it was
category
honest.
Again.
That's an interesting category.
There's a load of shit in here, and none of the big costumes in superhero film. What's wrong with you guys?
Hela?
What?
I don't know what happened.
Hela costume is basically it's wandered in from the best hat category.
That's next. We'll get to that.
To me, it's between Mysterio and Spider-Verse. I just love that Mysterio, that can exist and nobody bats an eye, that the MCU has gotten to the level where we can now have a character and a costume like that. Everyone's like, yep, doesn't look goofy at all. That's great and that's cool. So that is on my shortlist. And Spider-Verse, I just love the creation of that costume. And it's come in that iconic montage, which I will never get touching. And I just love how that costume is created, the storytelling to lead up to that point, and how it's amazing. Had the Spider-Man Miles Morales in the film, and that costume was so iconic that they made that costume available to anybody who plays the game from basically the beginning. It's made its way into this game now.
I think a lot of costumes have made their way into those games.
Oh, but you know what I mean. Like,
I know what you mean.
The selling point of the entire game. I mean, you saw so many videos, you know, before the game was coming out, once the game is coming out, of people just reenacting What's Up Danger with the Spider-Verse costume in the Spider-Man game, because the costume is so cool, because that moment is so cool. So it'll be between those two for me.
I think you have to disqualify the Spider-Verse costume, because
it's really Spider-Man.
Because in a category with the Raimi Spider-Man costume, like they're both sort of riffs on the, you know, the, like the Ditko, like basically the best superhero outfit that you know ever, which is the original Ditko Spider-Man. And I kind of think in a category with those two, if you're going to give it to a Spider-Man costume, it has to be that first one. Although I'd pick the Deadpool costume. I think there's an argument to be made for that. Even
Deadpool was up for it, but it didn't. I don't know. It doesn't edge out the others.
The Raimi Spider-Man costume's problem is Spider-Man is supposed to be a teenager who has made this costume himself, and it looks like something that's just stepped off the stage of Follies.
Yeah, where the hell does that silver stuff even come from?
Exactly.
What some cut industrial to manufacturer.
To be fair, it was his second draft, you know? Yeah, right? Get better. Really, he really showed improvement.
The problem I have with the Raimi Spider-Man costume, right, is that the one thing in Amazing Spider-Man 2 that is good is the costume, which is the most accurate version of the Spider-Man outfit that has ever been put on screen.
Mm-hmm. And Jamie Foxx, as we all see, that's the other thing.
I feel like the argument I always make on this is I don't care about accuracy. I just care if it looks good in the context of the movie. I love that. I love that first Maguire costume, but I also don't really care about this category, because like when costumes get redesigned for the sequel. And someone's like, oh yeah, we did this and we did that and we did that. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. I didn't notice that it had changed. That's just me being as thick as I am with the scores. But afterwards, when it gets pointed out to me, I'm like, great. Yeah.
I think Karen's totally right. I think it's got to be Birds of Prey, because Birds of Prey has a aesthetic of its own, which it is not beholden to a comic for. Mm. The difficulty with saying, well, it's the most accurate version of the best Spider-Man costume. Firstly, it doesn't even have a blue hoodie with the sleeves ripped off, so it can't be the best Spider-Man costume. But it's too in hoc to the comics. And you know me, I like comics are amazing, and a comic is a comic, and a film is a film. And Birds of Prey is so designed and has such a phenomenal aesthetic. Like, every cell of that movie is gorgeous to look at, and the costume design is meticulous. When you look at, you break down the components of, particularly somebody like Harley's costume, it's absolutely wonderful. I really, really think it's something where the amount of effort that's gone into giving it its own look, particularly given that that version of Harley is essentially an evolution of the awful Suicide Squad version of Harley, which in itself is an evolution of the awful Arkham Games version of Harley. And you know, when she went from being a clown to being like an evil juggalo, and the fact that they managed to take that costume and make something which is very much Harley's own thing rather than somebody else's imposition on of what they think Harley should be wearing. And it's a cliche to say it, but like it's very obvious the difference when you have women producing the film rather than dudes producing the film.
Yeah, and 100%. I think Caroline, you tweeted about this, didn't you? The adaptability of Harley's costume, that it's kind of like, it is essentially one piece that she either adds to or takes away from throughout the movie, and has like four or five distinct styles in that film from one starting point.
Yeah, I think the thing is, it depends on how we're looking at this category. I think if it's like best overall costumes for a film, for me, it would definitely be Birds of Prey. But if we're trying to highlight like one specific hero outfit, do you know what I mean? I feel like Birds of Prey is so fun within the world it's creating, but it is sort of like she's putting on and taking off pieces throughout. And so that does make it slightly less iconic to me than something like a Peter Parker outfit or a Miles Morales. So if we're going like, you know, Oscar best costumes, for me, that would definitely be Birds of Prey. But if we're taking this in a different direction, then I would almost lean more towards the Spider-Man direction. One of the Spider-Men.
Which one, though?
I would probably go Raimi, because I think that was like in the world where we had just had X-Men and there was a brief thought that we will just not have good costumes point. Anymore to go that bold with the costume, even if it's maybe in retrospect not the most original, sort of like, you know, it set the trend in I think what would become an important way.
Mm-hmm. Right, do we need to put this to a vote?
I think it's time.
Yeah.
Right, so who has Miles Morales?
Guys.
One vote from Amon for Miles Morales. Who has Tobey Maguire Spider-Man?
Yeah.
We have three votes for that. And then who has Birds of Prey? Harley Quinn.
Deadpool, I vote for
Deadpool. And Reese votes for Deadpool. So wait, did Tobey Maguire win?
Yep.
No, I think it was yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just.
I mean, I love it. Natural web shooters and everything. Okay.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Caroline, I just want to give you a quick spotlight here. Every year we choose a best TV show, and I'll be honest, we're just kind of like, it's just, you know, a shot in the dark based on what we might have happened to have watched. And I would argue, actually, probably looking back, the superhero TV that I have watched in the past 5 years hasn't actually been what people have held up as like the best of it. So what I would like, if you could just throw out, as someone who covers a lot of superhero TV, the highlights as far as you're concerned, and then we can see if anyone else has anything that they think is a worthy challenger.
Yeah, well, for this year in particular, I would say two highlights for me were the second season of The Umbrella Academy, which I thought was a huge improvement on the first, and like really fun to watch a show evolve in that way and lean into what works and sort of like drop what doesn't. And then I also think the Stargirl TV show is just like super sweet, endearing, lovely superhero TV at its best, like really like a welcome sort of new tone for the genre. So those were two like favorites overall. I'm also a big Supergirl fan. I mean, I'm really just naming the things I get paid to cover, because there really is a limit to how many things I can watch beyond that. But yeah, so I think the Supergirl TV show I love. And I really love Daredevil, the Charlie Cox Daredevil.
Yes.
Oh, so those are like, oh, and you know what? Actually, The Punisher, which I never in a million years would thought would have been for me, but was just like so invested in. And then, I don't know, are you wanting us to go all the, I mean, I guess it doesn't really, there's no time limit. Like, I used to like Smallville back in the day. Like, that was,
yes.
It has to be from the lifetime of the show, I think.
Okay.
Do you not think that Smallville and Scrubs had the wrong theme tunes and they should have swapped?
Oh, well. For the listeners, listeners who don't know the benefit of our camera, Al kept that completely deadpan the entire time.
But
watch a lot of superhero TV, right?
To the extent that I can, I would really want to echo the nomination of Stargirl. I think Stargirl is a great show. I think it's got such a good tone, and it's so refreshing to see, particularly in a world where the Flash, I used to really love the Flash show, and then it just became this kind of melodramatic. Yep. It was like watching Neighbours. Everything was just way blown out of all normal proportion. And Stargirl having a much more upbeat approach and a much more just a much more brightly lit aesthetic is great. Other thing, my number one probably would still be Legends of Tomorrow, which is the funnest of any superhero show that
I fell out of love with Legends of Tomorrow because I get that there's elements of fun, but there's got to be some element of actual seriousness there as well. And it felt like they were taking too many liberties with that. It felt like too much was a joke. And so I sort of fell out of love with Legends a little bit. But I completely third the Stargirl discourse. I really, really like that show. I still think that in the initial episodes, the way in which people were being selected to take on certain mantles was far too rushed, and I didn't like that at all. But by the end of the season, they had grown into their roles somewhat, and just the likability of the show was really, really good. I also, even though it, goes beyond my, I have a cheese tolerance, and sometimes Supergirl takes it to another level. But that being said, I love that a show like Supergirl exists, especially when you have people in Warner Brothers who are claiming that, they don't know how to bring a Superman movie to life in 2020. I mean, it's just too hard, guys. What do we do? Whereas the tenets of Superman are embodied by shows like Supergirl, are embodied by things like Crisis, which had Brandon Routh reprising his role, and showing you how to do Superman in the modern age. It can be done. It should be done. If there's any time in modern history right now that we need a Superman movie, it's right the hell now. Give me a brilliant Superman movie, please.
You said the tenets of Superman. All I could think then was like a tenet, like tenet was Superman in it.
That's when he flies backwards around the earth in the first film.
Oh man! Joey, can I posit that we give this award to the CW verse, the Arrowverse in general? Having said that, I love those shows. Or I've dropped off a bit, like some of the other panelists, but I love those shows. But I really enjoyed The Boys this year. I watched the first season this year of The Boys, and I found that it's not an amazing show, but quite a nice sort of holds a distinct position of being counter to some of the other superhero TV shows and movies, and I've enjoyed that. So I'll just throw The Boys in as
the show that killed the tick.
Sure. I really like The Boys too. I really like how it interrogates its ideas. It's really, really interesting. I remember the line which sticks out to me. I can't remember it verbatim, but the line which sticks out to me about season two is when, like, they're saying with the new character Stormfront, she's obviously, very racist, and she has a lot of rhetoric to that effect. But she says something like, they like what we're saying, they just don't like it when we say we're Nazis, which is so 100% right for today's world. And it really is like, these guys get it. And you have to, if you're talking about the stuff that they're talking about and the way that they're talking about it, you have to really understand it and get it. Even though there are people who are going to take the wrong message from what you're talking about because people are idiots. But yeah, you really have to understand it the right way. And I don't think I know for sure because I've had interviews that the character playing Stormfront, she would not have signed on to the role if she didn't she wasn't fully confident that these guys, you know, weren't going to treat her character and treat her irresponsibly, and they didn't. And, you know, in, yeah, I really, so the second season really, really was great. And I appreciate what they're doing with Homelander as well. He's probably, of all,
it's really fun.
It's so good. And, like, he, like, there's not many characters that I, you know, generally sort of make my skin crawl. And actually, when they look like I feel afraid for the other dudes, Homelander is that dude. And that's, you know, not only a mark of a great performance, but a really great character work as well. So, yes, seconded on The Boys. That might be my vote, The Boys.
I know that this is the show that is not allowed to be spoken on this podcast, but I did finally catch up with Watchmen, and it was as excellent as everyone says, and similarly to what it sounds like The Boys is, and probably even more so, like, super thoughtful in how it was sort of...
Oh, God, that was this picture. That's fully the last, left the... That's the last 5 years, right? Oh, Watchmen, yeah, my vote. Sorry, I just literally... Because that's... I view that as, like, as actual, like, proper TV, not superhero bullshit. Right. Oh, Watchmen, Watchmen's the vote. Oh, God, sorry. Of course. Absolutely.
You know what, I'm just going to make sure...
Just to drag us back onto the actual award here.
So it's going to be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Well, most of these shows didn't get nominated. So my question is, how do we pick the best?
We've never gone.
No one can possibly have seen
so
anything. Like,
well, it's between The Boys and Stargirl.
What I was going to say is, why don't we just get everyone's quick feeling on what their best is, and we'll leave it at that rather than pick an overall winner. Because we can't possibly have all seen everything.
Howard!
Well, I my answer would be the show that must not be named, but I would, you know.
You can say it just because it's Christmas. You can say it this week.
So generous, James.
Honestly.
I'm in Love Actually now.
I could not in all good conscience vote for that show, though. Like, it would feel like an insult to Seb's memory to vote for Watchmen on this podcast. So, I think the first season of The Flash is the most I've enjoyed a superhero show. So that would be my vote.
Okay, mine is Daredevil. Netflix Daredevil, because it nailed the character, and as a Daredevil nerd, I just got so much joy even out of the increasingly worse appearances of the character. I enjoyed Charlie Cox in the role so much.
I'm going to change my vote again then, because if we included Daredevil, then that might have to be my vote too. And there are a lot of shows, you know, they cancelled the Netflix Marvelverse, and there was something like, you know, Iron Fist, like, you know, fine, don't care. Jessica Jones, okay, that's a bit of a bummer. I thought the second season was pretty good. I really liked the first season. Yeah, okay. Luke Cage, I really wanted to see where they're going. Daredevil, like, I was so, like, the third season was so good. I was like, there's no way they're casting Daredevil. I'm like, ugh.
Okay.
Because Caroline. I was ready. Sorry, I'm rambling. James just cut me off. Savage.
Yes, we spend a lot of time on TV shows.
Yeah. I'm going to go, I think Supergirl has its ups and downs, but at its best is like everything that a superhero show should be. So I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah. I really love Supergirl too. Reese?
Can I just vote for the Arrowverse, or do I have to be more specific?
No, you can vote for the Arrowverse. That's fine, the Arrowverse.
Fine. You just want to move on?
Mike, you've stayed very quiet on this category. Do you watch much superhero TV?
Oh, come on. I don't know. TV's my kryptonite. I don't watch anything.
So Mike abstains. I'm abstaining. Al, what do you have?
It's very difficult. Legends was my first thought, but then I think in terms of actually shows that are no longer right, I want to kind of memorialise something. And you mentioned The Tick, and The Tick was so good. Series 2 in particular was so good. But in terms of shows that are no longer around that I wish were still around, Agent Carter.
Oh,
yes!
God. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm going to pull a Reese. I've changed my vote. It's Agent Carter. Agent Carter's the only show with two votes. Agent Carter wins, and we move on.
Watchmen!
Daredevil has two votes.
Does it? Oh, shit. They both win. Carry on.
Red lightning!
Right, let's speed round this next one because really I'm going to get...
How many more categories are there, Jerry? Can
like,
I just ask?
Like six.
Are you serious?
If anyone needs to leave, that is fine. You know, if anyone gets too drunk, and I'm including just myself here, that's also fine. Best casting. So this is just, you know, like who cast their movies the best. We had Birds of Prey for this year, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Panther, The Tick, Captain America, The First Avenger, and Scott Pilgrim as the previous winners. Mike, given that you have no opinions on superhero TV, I want to come to you first here. Which superhero movie do you think is particularly well cast? And we tend to go to like first installments here, given that obviously sequels are, it's normally a case of like getting one or two bits of casting right.
Yeah, I think this is Black Panther knocking out of the park. Every role is perfect. And, you know, I mean, to the point where, you know, we can talk about other films here, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America, First Avenger, where the characters and the performances grow over time. Everybody's perfect straight away in Black Panther.
Yeah.
And I would wonder whether the counterpoint to that, like, or to, you know, to ask this question about all of these other movies. If the lead actor was removed from any of these other movies, you know, for instance, could you make a Scott Pilgrim sequel that doesn't have Michael Cera in it? Could you make the Tick without Griffin Newman? Could you make Black Panther? Well, sorry, Black Panther is the example. Guardians of the Galaxy, could you make without Chris Pratt? Yes. Al crossing his fingers there. And and could you make Birds of Prey without Margot Robbie? You could make a Birds of Prey movie without Margot Robbie, I think. You couldn't
make that movie.
Yes. But what I'm talking about, could you continue that franchise without that lead actor? And I think the why Black Panther is for me is the choice as well, is that it is, if you'd have said this to me before Chadwick Boseman passed, I would have gone, it's kind of unimaginable to think how you could possibly do that movie without him. But then when you are forced with no other option, I kind of feel like you go, well, you definitely can't recast him, but also there isn't a weak link in the rest of that cast that makes me go, I wouldn't want to see that movie.
And so I have watched and listened from the mountains.
The fact that that movie has Daniel Kaluuya like 10th on the call sheet.
Yeah. It's sensational, a cast.
And he still manages to leave an impression. Those eyes, man, that stare.
Mm-hmm.
The
quick thing about Black Panther is that it gives you your six favourite actors for the next 2-3 years. And you'll be watching, I mean, even Letitia Wright when she's in Small Axe, who's fantastic, in Mangrove. Yeah. You're following them in every choice they make afterwards. Guardians of the Galaxy, really great cast, but I wasn't really to watch Jurassic World 2 or whatever.
Yeah. With Guardians, what it gave us was the realisation that Dave Bautista is an incredibly talented comedic actor.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I mean, Michael Rooker just comes on and rooks about the place in his normal fashion.
Rooker gonna rook.
Exactly.
I do think, and I'll always stick up for this, but Bradley Cooper's performance as Rocket doesn't get enough love. It's incredible.
Yeah, but casting-wise, you know, what a great idea, let's cast Bradley Cooper in a role. Like, at that point when he was cast, he's Bradley Cooper, you know? Whereas, compared to Black Panther, a lot of those guys have way smaller profiles, which makes the casting and the fact that you've made stars of a lot of those people.
I think
the people who are the elder states people in that cast are just... I mean, they are incredible actors with long careers behind them of wonderful performances, and you go, yeah, I absolutely believe that people will come and pay fealty to, you know, Angela Bassett and people like that. You know, the only thing that when the only thing you can say about a film is that it made a lot of black people who I know take the Mickey out of Forrest Whitaker's accent. That's the only bad thing I heard anyone say about the casting in that film.
Yeah, I think if anyone has got any dissent against Black Panther, speak now. But
the strength of the Black Panther will be stripped away.
Oh, he is so good, isn't he? Yeah, Black Panther. Okay, Black Panther is the winner of Best Casting. Let's go to Best Director. And I think we've got a really impressive list here. So James and I, and when I say James and I, mostly I selected Ang Lee for the Hulk. This year. Last year we went for Bong Joon-ho for Snowpiercer. The year before that, Ryan Coogler for Black Panther. Patty Jenkins for Wonder Woman, Sam Raimi for Spider-Man 2, and Edgar Wright for Scott Pilgrim. I mean, that's a damn fine list. I think that's a really good list.
It's Coogler for me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the, like, maybe Patty Jenkins, maybe apart from Patty Jenkins, but a lot of the rest of the directors on that list, they really, for the most part, only have to be concerned with delivering a really good movie. Ryan Coogler has to, you know, obviously be concerned about that, but he also has to be thinking about the reaction from, like, literally every black person upon the planet. He's got to think about the reaction to from all the MCU fans. He's got to be, you know, thinking about the fact that this is, like, the first time that we're going to have a black superhero movie of this scale, and what does that mean? He's got all these other things on his mind that he has to be thinking about in addition to making an amazing movie. And he pulled it off. It's Ryan Coogler.
Yeah, I would agree. For me, I feel like my top choices would be, especially in this, you know, I love Snowpiercer so much, but I feel like if we are thinking, okay, we really want to honor, like, the full-on superhero movies here, it would definitely be Ryan Coogler, Patty Jenkins, and Sam Raimi would be my three. But I agree totally that I think Ryan Coogler, in terms of how much of a world he built, like, he didn't just give us a movie, he gave us, like, an entire world, and that's such an incredibly difficult thing to have pulled off, and he does so incredibly well.
Yeah, that's the thing that I remember about Black Panther, is that it feels like a proper experience. Like, it feels almost like you're going on a sort of tour of this completely new world. And, like, from the design, the characters, just every part of it worked. And I think, you know, it all comes back to the director in those cases.
Well, okay, hold on, controversial. So, I just wonder whether, especially the MCU at that point, you know, and Feige and the previs set up, all that sort of the stuff you hear about with how those movies are made, I just wonder whether Coogler, I say, you know, we've given him cast, we've given that movie casting, did we give that award to script for Panther or score? Anyway, what I'm saying is, I just wonder, you know, do we all just 100% agree that Ryan Coogler, and solely Ryan Coogler, should was in complete control of that project from beginning to end, and he then owns every kind of all of the positives of the film,
what you're getting at, which is that there are aspects of Black Panther that you would say in the final 20 minutes are not well directed, and I think the assumption that we're making here is that Coogler didn't really direct them. Is that fair?
And maybe, well, yes, and maybe
probably as much as anyone in the MCU, any director in the MCU probably is not hands-on with a 100%. Lot of the action
but
stuff.
I'd pitch you Raimi, you know, actually you said Caroline, Raimi, it's Spider-Man 2. I just think that is such a directed film, and such a, that sequences in that film make me, like, feel ways in the way that the filmmaking has been executed. You know, that's, you see, I just love the way that movie is made.
I'm really excited to see
hands-on Avi Arad was with that stuff as well. That's not meant to be a joke, but, like, Black Panther is a product partly of the Marvel factory, then the Sony factory was very much in evidence on the
a fair point, which is that, you know, we can't necessarily second guess who's done what. We, like, his name is on the film. Like, the director's names are on the films.
I kind of feel like...
We have to assume that it's their work.
If you assume everything is their own work, I don't think there is a stretch in Spider-Man 2 that you would say is as poorly directed as the train fight sequence, which I kind of think, aside from the fact it's boring, isn't like, it isn't that easy to follow.
We're back to dueling train fights, are we?
Yeah, we're back to dueling train fights. Yeah, it's really, it's why I'm looking forward to Black Panther 2, though, because what you do tend to see with Marvel when they retain directors is that the director, when they come back the second time around, does seem to have much more of a handle on every aspect. I mean, I've made this argument before. I think the action in Ant-Man and the Wasp is just, like, impeccably well choreographed, and I think that's because Peyton Reed has his hands on it from, you know, word go. And I think that's the reason why there is so much insane excess in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is because James Gunn had his hands on it from word go. I think this is a tricky one. For me, it is between Raimi and Coogler as well. I think Snowpiercer is incredible, but it doesn't feel as appropriate for this category. Mike's shaking his head at something.
No. It's a really tricky one because you have like five of the great visionary directors of the last 20 odd years head to head here.
Oh wait, who are you excluding from that? Because we've got six names.
Sorry. I mean, I wouldn't say that Ang Lee should be in contention for Hulk.
James described this as most directed when I gave him this nomination.
I mean, not a superhero movie, but James Cameron for Terminator 2. Should be this year's pick, surely. But anyway, Ryan Coogler.
In brackets next to all of these is awesome and Terminator 2.
The thing that elevates Ryan Coogler, you have so many of these filmmakers who you can pinpoint elements of their sensibility, well-directed scenes, etc. But Ryan Coogler is the guy that he is not a director for hire who gets to pick the soundtrack, have a couple of his favorite actors in. He's bringing in Ludvig Göransson, who's been working with since Fruitvale Station, Rachel Morrison on cinematography. There is a whole world he is bringing to this film, as well as stepping up to the plate, however you want to go with this metaphor, the big canvas. He's bringing more than just a director. Yeah, so the way that Bong Joon-ho, Edgar Wright, you watch Scott Pilgrim, you watch Snowpiercer, and they are undeniably their films. Spider-Man is undeniably Sam Raimi. Ryan Coogler is doing something much larger here and is approaching, I don't want to say auteur status, but there is something here that no one else is doing in their films.
Yeah. And actually the argument would go, the fact that he could even get close to an auteur on a Marvel movie is kind of mad and to be applauded, right?
You compare it with Thor Ragnarok, where you can say that
Marvel.
Yeah.
You can compare with Thor Ragnarok, where it's just the sort of the dialogue and delivery and the performances. That's what Taika Waititi did. Maybe not the rest of it. Maybe Doctor Strange can pinpoint a couple of things here and there. Ryan Coogler is this with Black Panther is this huge tapestry of filmmaking.
Yeah, okay.
Anyone want to argue against Mike on that?
The lone voice for Black Panther. I'm not the lone voice for Black Panther.
I was just going to say, so before we had our other big debate was Doc Ock versus Killmonger. We went Doc Ock. It feels like this is our battle point too. It's only fitting to go Black Panther here because we want to award this movie for all the amazing things it does. And I think Ryan Coogler is like a perfect vessel for that award.
We have best films still to come.
Well, these films have won one each, so we're getting down to the best Nickelback song category.
And this year, a hero.
That's a disturbingly good Chad Kruger. Okay, so the winner there is Ryan Coogler for Black Panther. We are now going to go to Best Hero, another one of our made-up awards.
No.
This year, James and I went for Brandon Routh's Superman because we didn't have many choices. Last year, we went for a split decision for Iron Man and Captain America for Endgame.
So we have we have another character in the mix.
well, no, not necessarily, because the year before we went for just Captain America, and I think that was for Civil War, and I think that was me and James trying to wind Seb up. then we had Wonder Woman for Wonder Woman, Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, and Christopher Reeve's Superman.
Oh God! Oh, oh wow! Wait, what? That really like
wait a second. You snuck that one in at the end.
This should be
Why did you bother reading the rest of the list?
This one for me is going to be really tough. It's going to be really easy. Christopher B, Superman, next.
Right, can we make a case against him? I'm just wondering. He fucked it up the first time. He shouldn't have needed to have to.
I mean, Reeve had, and I'm just like, what movie did you watch?
No, so this is specifically the hero, right? This is who is the best hero. It's not performance. It's not.
Oh right. Yeah. Okay.
It's who is the best hero here.
If that's the case, it's between Reeve, Superman, and Iron Man in Endgame, because thinking about how he went out, that's like the ultimate sacrifice, and you know, thinking about sort of, you know, him choosing to make that decision, knowing what he's leaving behind, knowing sort of what it took to sort of coax him into going along with the mission itself, having him be going along with the mission and him being the key to figuring out how to even execute the mission in the first place. I mean, he is key to that film in many, many ways. So,
having said that, I think that Seb should get an absentee vote on this award, and Seb will vote Superman, and that his vote would be worth 100 of the rest of us. So I think conversation over.
Yeah. I mean, I said from the beginning, first of all, Superman. I was just trying to be the devil's advocate and say, you know,
I think it has to be Superman.
Yeah. I mean, he is what everything still gets compared to. I mean, so when Wonder Woman came out, I kind of made the case that that was there were moments in that film that evoked Christopher Reeve Superman for me. Mm-hmm. That kind of felt like, oh, this is like Urtex storytelling. There's no. Postmodern take here. This is straight down the line superheroes.
Yeah.
This is what you imagine when you think superhero. I think Iron Man is like probably pretty obviously like the defining superhero of this like third era of superheroes, the post 2008 mm-hmm. era, which that and The Dark Knight kicks off, because he's flawed and he's selfish and yet he still is at times, you know, like a phenomenal superhero. I kind of love that in Endgame when we were making this argument for him that like he's willing to do all of this, but he's willing to do all of that like on the proviso that it's not going to wipe his daughter from existence. There is that like that is still kind of more important to him than the rest of the stuff. And I think it's only the fact that he has his own daughter and the surrogate son in Spider-Man that kind of pushes him into making the decision in the first place.
Although you know, sorry, Al, you go.
I was going to say MCU Iron Man, and to a lesser extent MCU Captain America, are the only two really that get to do something which is so uncommon for superheroes, and it's to finish their story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know that you're never going to. Even in Superman Returns, it's not meant to be the end of that Superman version of Superman. I mean, turned out, but you know, but it's not the story is not the end of that Superman. Whereas Endgame is absolutely definitively the end of a long story, which they made the most of the fact that, I mean, people talk about the MCU movies like, well, you can't just watch one of them; you have to watch all of them to get the full thing, which is a clear nonsense. But if you do watch them all. It's like one of those kind of flip book things where if you like get to see individual images, each film is its own individual piece of a much larger plot for characters like Iron Man. And when you get the Iron Man from 2008's Iron Man versus the Iron Man from Endgame, and you see the amount of development that's happened to that character over, you know, 8 movies or whatever. And the fact that the story is told and it's done. Yeah. And I really admire that. At the same time, it's absolutely clearly Christopher Reeve Superman is the winner of this category.
here's the like positive case I make for Superman too, beyond just like it feels obvious and it feels right. I think so, like growing up, I didn't read comics. My main insights to or inroad to superheroes were the Spider-Man movies, the X-Men cartoon and movies. And the Batman, early Batman franchise. And all of those, it was like, they were basically just action heroes, right? Like they're like relatable action heroes that felt like things I had seen before. And it was not until I started watching Supergirl and actually Captain America, which I think are two heroes very explicitly building on the Reeves version of Superman, that I was like, oh, this is what a superhero is. It's beyond just like the snarky, relatable good guy who fights bad guys. It's like there is an innate goodness, like fundamental goodness to this Superman character that sets him apart from any other action franchise. Like, this is what it is to be a superhero. And I think that template is sort of unique in that level of goodness really only exists in this superhero genre. It's not something other action mm-hmm. franchises really dip into. So I think in terms of like the best superhero, like the fact that Superman is so unique and has inspired these other, you know, characters that carry on that legacy, like, yeah, I feel like you've just got to give it to him.
And when you remember that first film, he doesn't show up until nearly the midpoint in terms of Reeves' Superman. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that his version of the character makes such an impact in the second half of the film. But I think that the first half of the film builds up what that character is going to mean and going to represent when you see him in Metropolis wearing that costume and being Superman. Yeah, and you know, I know it leans really heavily on the like the Christian mythology, the ideology and the imagery, but when he does turn up, it really does feel special. And we were talking about this in our Superman Returns episode recently. That movie has a couple of special moments where people in the streets look on in awe at Superman just as he flies past. And they're like some of the strongest moments in the film. And that's not because Brandon Routh has just come in and Bryan Singer has just done this incredible job of setting up this character. It's because you're looking at the idea of Superman fly past, and on screen, the idea of Superman is Christopher Reeve.
And I think the other thing differentiates the MCU's Iron Man and the Reeves Superman in a really key way is that when you get to the end of Endgame, Iron Man gives up everything for everybody else. Like, he becomes the most selfless. You know, he is the best of us. Superman is the best of us as well. But the difference is that Superman is the best of us but believes that you could be too. Mm-hmm. Superman has that faith back at people who he is dealing with. Whereas Iron Man, I don't think, thinks too much about the people he's dealing with. Superman believes in humans.
Yeah.
You should write Superman comics, Alf. That was good.
Don't make me do that.
Okay, it sounds like it's pretty unanimous. Superman is our best hero. So we move on. We have four categories left. We have best actress up now. So again, we talked about this, superhero movies traditionally not necessarily always the best for female roles. This year, I have in brackets all Linda Hamilton, but the winner is Margot Robbie for Birds of Prey. And she will go up against Rosa Salazar in Alita: Battle Angel, Zoe Saldana in Infinity War, Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman, Hayley Atwell in Captain America: The First Avenger, and Hayley Atwell in Agent Carter, who was our winner for the first 2 years in a row. Again, if you have any thoughts outside of the category, outside of the previous winners, throw them out. But I think we've got some good ones in there.
I'm going to go, I think, great category. Many strong choices that I would be thrilled with. I'm going to go Margot Robbie, though, because I feel like I actually just loved Birds of Prey. The further I've gotten away from it, the more I just like remember it warmly. I put it on my best films of the year list. Like, I think it has individual flaws, but the overall effect of it was strong enough to sort of counteract those. And I think as just an entire, you know, like we mentioned this, like Wonder Woman is very much building on that Superman model. Gal Gadot is awesome in it, but maybe is something we've seen slightly more, whereas like whatever Margot Robbie's doing is not like anything I've seen before. And that level of commitment to the zaniness of it is that she really makes that character her own in a way that I just really love to watch.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think Margot Robbie is doing Harley Quinn the same way Hugh Jackman's doing Wolverine or something. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be so hard to recast that character and not be influenced by her. I turned up to Birds of Prey and Suicide Squad purely to see Margot Robbie because she's great, and particularly as that character, I think she's unequaled.
It will be between Godot and, but I would lean to Robbie because of Birds of Prey, because I just look at the difference between that portrayal and Suicide Squad, and you could just tell that with Birds of Prey, Margot being in the role, she had more say over that character in a big way. And really sort of just enjoyed on that level. And yeah, it's doing something which is going to be hard to, you know, but I wouldn't put it on quite as iconic as I was talking about. But in terms of thinking about the future of that character, and it's going to be hard to get away from Harley Quinn because it's just that good. And I wouldn't quite call it iconic, but it's very well on its way to get another full film for the future, because I really need Birds of Prey. I think we could see it get to that level.
I think,
yeah, because
No, go on, Reese.
Well, I mean, yeah, I took Margot Robbie as well, because I think the comparison to Hugh Jackman is totally apt. But I also think that, you know, what Jackman had in Wolverine is a more conventional character, more conventional hero. You know, the sort of gruff, sort of sexy loner underdog, sort of side character who is this big hero like that. That's almost a more conventional leading role to play. Whereas almost the magic of the Margot Robbie Harley Quinn thing is that she has so much less, or she has a much more, she's kind of starting much further back than he and that did, and yet gets it in almost in a shorter space of time to one of the sort of most important, iconic, you know, franchise leading superhero performances, just from her force of charisma, and again having found this perfect role for her. Yeah, it's great. It's also that even makes it, it's fun. It's, you know, it's so much fun. That's what makes it all a bit too serious. Like, it's just really fun, and it's so kind of light. It's always, she's so light to watch in that role in the various iterations, in the various movies that she's made. Yeah.
Mike, do you have thoughts here? Are you jumping on the Margot Robbie train?
I am going to out myself. I've not seen Suicide Squad or Birds of Prey.
Well, on the one hand, you are very lucky.
On the other hand, I've missed one of the best films of the year. So
you just have more to look forward to.
I'm very happy to be persuaded in that direction, or abstain. It seems like for the narrative of the podcast, though, there needs to be a strong defence of Hayley Atwell. Sure.
Well, okay. That, now is Joe's time to shine.
Did you think Joe wasn't
So I hate to start this off on with a smear campaign, but I don't get Margot Robbie. I think that character, I think the iconography of that character is, you know, it's unquestionable, but I think what she overcame with what David Ayer kind of dressed her up as, and the way his camera ogled her was so grim, and the fact that she came out of that film as like the one bright spot with her like integrity intact is great. I don't really feel like I still understand that character or what drives her. And I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever been particularly taken by a Margot Robbie performance in anything. And I know I'm in the minority there. And
I was
happy,
about to say,
I'm happy to just go, look, this is something with it I just don't get. And
Jill, she's so good in both Bill and Ted 3 and Ready or Not.
Is that a Samara Weaving joke?
Yes.
Yes. wonderful.
Have you seen her in I, Tonya?
Yeah.
Because she is incredible in that movie. In my opinion, she should have won the Oscar for that movie. She's incredible. But sorry, continue.
No, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. I've honestly, every time I've seen her in anything, I've gone, yeah, I just don't know. And that might just be on me, but I don't like Birds of Prey. I don't think Birds of Prey is a good movie, but everyone else does. So that's fine. I just kind of accept that maybe I was in a bad mood when I saw it, and you know, I haven't seen it since it was in cinemas. So maybe I will.
Joe, this is supposed to be a pro Hayley Atwell case, not
so that was the negative ad at the start. Hayley Atwell's phenomenal. I have adored everything she has done with that character. Now, on this list, this is specifically First Avenger and Agent Carter. I voted for Agent Carter as the best TV show. I think she's phenomenal as a lead actress in that. I think she's phenomenal as a supporting actress in First Avenger. I don't think anyone has had the level of chemistry that she and Chris Evans have in the first Captain America movie. And again, that's a character that doesn't really exist on the page, that she just took. And I know that you could say that, like, perhaps that she was set up to be the kind of the Sharon Carter of that movie, but it is a different character, and she puts her own spin on it. And she got that TV show on the basis of being, you know, that really distinctive in that movie, and then in the short film that they made as one of the Marvel one-shots. I think if there was any justice, there would be an Agent Carter Disney Plus series being lined up right now, because I don't think many of the characters they're spinning off have made the case quite as emphatically as Hayley Atwell made in First Avenger that this person could be the lead of their own TV show. I love her. I think she's fantastic. And she would be my choice by a long way. And Zoe Saldana would be the second, because I think Zoe Saldana's the moment she realizes what Thanos actually thinks at the top of as she's about to be sacrificed, like the horror in her eyes when she realizes, oh wait, is this guy saying he loves me? Fuck. Like I think she is incredible in Infinity War. But yeah, it was still just about behaving out well for me. But I think I'm about to get voted down 6-1.
No, well, hold on. As much as I made an impassioned or joined the impassioned votes for Margot Robbie, I've been hearing you during the podcast talk about Hayley Atwell for 5 years, and I would be okay with her winning this, even just to represent the podcast's views, you know. And you've sold me a bit on the idea that she. You know, Margot Robbie sort of has some stuff to work with Harley Quinn. Like, Harley Quinn was a popular, interesting, quirky character on the page for decades. And Hayley Atwell with Peggy Carter sort of created something out of whole cloth that ended up being the final scene of the MCU 10-year chunk. You know, she was part of that.
I guess again, that's kind of something that I kind of feel like Margot Robbie. She had the 1-2 punch of Wolf of Wall Street and Suicide Squad, but I kind of feel like if someone else had been cast as Harley Quinn, they could have also become kind of iconic and the next, like.
You know, disagree. I was coming along your side
of the generation.
Disagree. No, but
I feel like I feel like Peggy Carter is the role that you could have cast any British actress with a cut glass accent of her generation, and so many of them would have done nothing with it.
And what would Hayley Atwell do with material as bad as Suicide Squad? that's the only dividing line I've got.
I mean, she is in The Sweeney, if you want to find out. and in fairness, the answer is not a lot.
I think there's an alternate.
I was just going to say, I think the only way to settle this is to give it to Melissa Benoist for Supergirl, who actually made me get this award.
I would be okay with that. She's very, very good in that role. And again, in terms of just embodying the tenets movies. Stop it. Superman. she's very, very in that role. So yeah, I'd be okay with that. But I still got Robbie.
Do we need? Should we put this to a vote, or does anyone have any final argument to make? Last second.
I actually think what's won me over more than anything else is Reese saying that Hayley Atwell feels most representative of this podcast. Like that actually, I think was a very accurate observation. So I'm almost ready to switch my vote to Hayley Atwell, I think.
Oh, don't do that. I'm on the Melissa train now.
Right. Okay. votes for Melissa Benoist. Or Benoist, sorry. And it's only out.
Don't leave me hanging.
Sorry.
Okay.
Votes for Margot Robbie.
Just for this podcast.
Votes for Margot Robbie. Okay, we've got two votes for Margot Robbie. So are the others all for Hayley Atwell?
Sure. Ah. I've just gone all over the place.
Wait, Mike, did you abstain or did you vote for someone?
I'm abstaining.
Okay. So Hayley Atwell, I don't know how I did it. But
can't
somehow
believe that is defeats naturally Jaws only friend from Margot Robbie.
Only thing I was going to say there was, can you imagine the alternate universe in which Natalie Dormer is Peggy Carter and Hayley Atwell plays a cameo character who steals a snog with Steve in a stationery cupboard?
Mad, utterly mad.
Or where Jenna Louise Coleman is Hayley is Peggy and Hayley Atwell is.
On Doctor Who.
The friend of some. Yeah, he's on Doctor Who. Yeah. That would probably be quite good. No, she's too hot for Doctor Who.
Sorry, this podcast will last another 18 hours if we're giving awards for alternate reality.
No, we've only got three left. Right, let's do it. Best actor. This year, by default, we gave it to Hugh Jackman for Days of Future Past, but ignore that. We have Robert Downey Jr. for Avengers Endgame. This category does not have much. Well, you'll see. Christopher Reeve for Superman 3, Hugh Jackman for X2 and Logan, Hugh Jackman for X-Men, and Robert Downey Jr. again for Iron Man. So we essentially have boiled this down over 6 years to Robert Downey Jr., Hugh Jackman, and Christopher Reeve, who I think you could make the argument are the three actors who have, outside of Chris Evans maybe, and actually Chadwick Boseman, but who have embodied their character, you know, you think of those people and you think of those roles. And
also that's emblematic of the three eras, really, of superhero movies, aren't they? You know, Reeve is your era one, and Jackman's your era two, and Downey's your era three.
And I guess Jackman gets his epilogue, but it really does feel like that's what it is with Logan.
Logan wins it for Jackman, though, right? Like that probably without Logan, those are real neck and neck.
Well,
with Logan, Jackman takes it. There we go.
You say that, but I'm looking at Caroline, who I know famously does not have much time for Logan.
Oh shit!
Yeah, it's true. I don't really like Logan, but I do love Hugh. Like, I'm not going to make an anti-Hugh Jackman case based on Logan. There's the Wolverine to consider, a movie that I love. My initial impulse was that because we were before debating Superman versus Iron Man, and we gave it to Superman, maybe we should give it to Downey here, because I do think he does so much original stuff with the character. But now I'm going Jackman. I really, again, I had a full cycle I went through, and I think I landed on Jackman. I love X-Men, that's always my go-to superhero franchise, so that'll be my pick.
Yeah, so I think with Jackman, you get like in X-Men 1, you get, you know, he's a young buck, he hasn't even joined the team, and then he comes around, and then 2, he's, and then 3,
at this point.
Everybody here, everybody on this Zoom knows, you can visualize how the range that Jackman delivers, and from that first movie, it all feels so consistent. You can watch all of those films again tomorrow, and you can see all that, those different facets of that character. And I love Downey Jr., and you know, he's the arguably like the co-author of the whole MCU that we all love. But I sort of think like what you see there is it's him. It's sort of more him, whereas if you look at Jackman, and he's given other performances, other different types of performances, you know, and so that feels more acting and yet with the same kind of.
You only have to look at Hugh Jackman's other movies to know how good he is as Wolverine.
love Greatest Showman. Better not be a Greatest Showman slight because I love that movie.
I think it's interesting here that I think we are talking between Jackman and Downey Jr. But I think it's interesting that the other ones that I named that actually, you know, didn't win this on in their respective years. You've got Christopher Reeve as Superman, you've got Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther, and you've got Chris Evans as Captain America, who I think all kind of perfectly embody their characters, but their characters are so kind of set in stone in terms of what they are and what they believe. Whereas I think that with Wolverine and Iron Man, you've handed those two actors characters that have a little bit more to play with. I think Hugh Jackman is phenomenal from the moment he walks on screen in X-Men. But I think the difficulty is, I think Hugh Jackman has been more consistent and is good in even the lesser X-Men movies. Robert Downey Jr., I would argue, has phoned it in a couple of times. But when he hasn't, the kind of the number of angles that he's had to play on that character over the years, you know, from Iron Man, I think the Iron Man 3 version of the character is my favourite. Civil War, as much as I don't love that movie, I think
tut.
trying to watch him kind of try and comprehend why he stands where he stands in that movie, or kind of like post-rationalize it to himself is really excellent. And then Endgame, where he gets to play the whole new angle with the family as well. I think I lean towards Robert Downey Jr.
No.
But this is kind of a collective rather than for one individual performance.
But it's not a fair fight. You watch Downey on interviews. He is Iron Man. It's at the end of that first movie. He is Iron Man. You know, so he's just kind of erupting with his natural persona, charm, movie star charisma. Yeah. It all comes out in those movies. Jackman, you watch Jackman interviews. Jackman isn't Wolverine. Jackman is the Greatest Showman, you know? So
Jackman is
all the Wolverine stuff, he's tamping it down. He's turning those knobs down.
You watch his career and really Wolverine is the one playing against type.
Yes.
Does tend to play against type like that in other movies, like when he is kind of doing his like gruff routine in a Van Helsing or a Real Steel, it doesn't tend to ring true, but there is something so perfect about his Wolverine that you never question it.
I don't think we can lay the problems with either Van Helsing or Real Steel at the feet of Hugh Jackman's performance.
Really,
I think if you were to say to Robert Downey Jr. though that he was phoning it in, then he would probably swallow hard, twitch his nostrils, purse his lips briefly, look at the ground and sniff.
Oh dear.
But then he'd probably accept it.
He literally, you know, Spider-Man 1, he's literally phoning in his performance. He's literally he's shooting wherever he happens to, Downey Jr. was at that moment. You're in Brazil? Okay, we're going to film you here. We're going to pretend you're in the suit over there. Like he phones in that.
I also think he's kind of bad in Age of Ultron, but I don't want to
say much. There'll be no Age of Ultron slander on this podcast.
I'm looking at Mike and he looks like he's got opinions.
Not on Age of Ultron. I agree with you on Age of Ultron, Joe. Sorry, Emma.
You'll do the him.
Sorry. But in the spirit of how we've been doing this so far, we are matching the films they won for in the past up against each other. So this isn't a career award for Hugh Jackman versus for Rob Downey Jr.
So technically, it's Iron Man and Endgame for RDJ, and it is X-Men, X2, Logan, and Days of Future Past for Hugh Jackman.
Okay, pretty even fight. Those are good films to be.
They're all good films,
from.
But I don't...
Apart from Days of Future Past, which is...
Days
of Future Past is a good film!
Yeah, it's a good film.
Sure. I think it's the opposite of not bad.
I just don't think that Hugh Jackman gave a performance where he had to carry so much of the weight of the emotion of the film that RDJ did in Endgame.
I don't want to hear from Mike.
In Logan, he literally has to carry the weight of Patrick Stewart.
he's not nominated for Logan, is he?
No, yeah, he is.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a half X2, half Logan nomination because they both fell in the same year.
So we gave him both. James is so savage.
Right. Does anyone...
I think in a way, the fact that it's Jackman 4 X2 slash Logan, going by the real rules of this episode, I feel like, again, that just gets him over the line, because you're so representative of his, of that, of the whole character, almost beginning to end. So much range there. In X2, you've got flashbacky stuff. You've got so much there from those two movies. I love Endgame. I love Downey Jr. in Endgame, but even, he has big stuff at the end of Endgame and arguably at the beginning, but there's so much else going on in that film. So again, if we're playing by the Michael rules, it has to be Jackman.
It's time to vote.
Yeah, it is time to vote. Okay, Hugh Jackman. Who is voting for Jackman? Four. I'm going with the majority then. Five. I don't know. Hugh Jackman. I honestly, I could have gone for either. I felt like Reese. So yeah, every time someone spoke, I was like, they are right. They're right. So Hugh Jackman is best actor. Right, only two awards left. I mean, we're going to do probably arguably the more fun one first. This is worst film. The worst film we have ever covered on Cinematic Universe. The nominees here are Superman 4, The Quest for Peace from this year, Dark Phoenix, Spawn, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Man of Steel, and the Josh Trank Fantastic Four.
Oh, Josh Trank Fantastic Four. I remember being in the screening for that movie. Good Lord Almighty.
Awful. The laughter. I was in the same screening.
Yes, you were. Echoing around the room. I'll never forget when they're doing that final scene.
Oh, God.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. And I was like begging them. I may have been saying it out loud, but I know that I was saying it inwardly, like, don't say it. Don't say it. And they say, friend.
I don't believe that Josh Trank directed that last scene. I just don't believe it. It doesn't belong on the end of that movie.
It's Fantastic Four for me. The runner up would be Dark Phoenix, because it just went out with such a whimper, that franchise. That was such a bummer. But
you're forgetting New Mutants, I think, my friend.
That's true. Yeah.
Good movie.
No, it isn't. It's so forgettable.
Don't spoil the podcast, Jack.
sorry. But it's Josh Trank's Fantastic Four for me. Josh Trank, maybe he's Fantastic Four.
I agree. I also think Fantastic Four, like, as a culture, it brought us a lot of fun of a thing to make fun of. And just a thing to dissect. Like, it feels like that was a real fun, like, phenomenon we all experienced together. And mostly, I feel like, maybe not Josh Trank, but, like, the actors have mostly emerged unscathed. They're sort of getting rescued in other superhero properties. Like, we had a fun laugh. Mostly everything came out okay. That's kind of like what I want from a bad movie.
Yeah. No, Michael B. Jordan went to the Human Torch Rehabilitation Center that is the MCU. Exactly. So that was good.
Teller has maybe got a bit dinged by that film. But yeah
maybe. He'll
can I take a moment to just make an argument that I have tried to make every year on this podcast? Man of Steel doesn't belong in this list.
Yeah,
I don't like Man of Steel, but I just don't think it belongs in a worst film list. It has enough going for it. It just has... I can understand why anyone who likes the kind of flashback 10 minutes to Al talking passionately about Superman. I can understand how anyone who has those thoughts then watches Man of Steel and goes, well, fuck that thing. But I just think it has enough. It has enough elements that I'm like, it's not.
Man of Steel is better than Batman Begins and Dark Knight Rises. Come at me, bro.
Wait. What the hell did you just say?
That was a glitch. You didn't. Whatever you heard, it wasn't. You heard something else.
What the hell came out of your mouth just now?
I can't really defend it with sentences, but it's in my heart.
Blasphemous.
I like the score. I like the theme. Speaking to a score, man. The song. I like the song, and then
It does have a good score. I think perhaps the film in this list that. There's a couple of films in this list that I think maybe could be just as at home in the Howard T. Duck Award. Spawn is right on the edge. It's so terrible. Yeah. But when I think back, I don't think, oh God, fuck that film. I think that was fun when we did that on the podcast. That was kind of fun. Like in a kind of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. way, or a Generation X kind of way. Like, I just look back fondly on it, and I feel like it would be too harsh to just. And Michael Jai White's kind of good. Like, he's good. Yeah. The actual hero in it's quite good. I think The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is a fucking abomination. I hate it.
but I think the costume's good.
I think The Amazing Spider-Man is worse, so I can't in good conscience vote for that.
How?
What I think we should take note of is Fantastic Four is very bad, and Josh Trank's career died because of it. But who produced that movie? Simon Kinberg, who directed another film on this list. Simon Kinberg.
I was going to make a case for Dark Phoenix, because that's a movie where every scene fails on an individual level. One of the major action set pieces is the X-Men trying to cross a road.
Well, and another major
scene fails on an individual level.
Another major action sequence is two characters high-fiving at a helicopter while looking constipated.
And it has that sequence that it intercuts between two different groups of people wandering around two different forests. It doesn't work on any level.
And I think as well that the reason for me that Dark Phoenix feels kind of appropriate is that that was a franchise that, coming off Days of Future Past, it went, holy shit, has the X-Men franchise managed to rival the MCU? I remember that moment where they brought out everyone on the stage at Comic-Con and you went, oh, wow, that's actually, they've got, you know, so many, like, great iterations of these characters and, like, a decade of history to play on, and people love Days of Future Past, and you're thinking, right, okay, what's the X-Men franchise going to do next? And they had the teaser for Apocalypse at the end, and you go, ooh, who's this Apocalypse? I mean, who's anyway. Who's this Apocalypse guy? And then cut to one film later, and yeah, and then meanwhile, the X franchise is at the side having huge successes with Deadpool and Logan. And then the franchise ends with Dark Phoenix getting farted out into the ether. It's remarkable how badly they fucked that up. And for me, Dark Phoenix is kind of like the distillation of all of that, of, look at this. It shouldn't be this bad. Remember how they announced that Mystique was dead before the movie came out?
Oh my Lord, yeah.
Also, it's like you've got Jennifer Lawrence, you've got James McAvoy, you've got Michael Fassbender, you've recast the original five iconic X-Men, you know, for a couple of movies now, but, you know, you've got all that, you've made a load of money, so you can sort of spend any amount of money you want on this film, and then what the movie is Dark Phoenix. Yeah, that's it. That has to win.
I know there was a lot of passion for Fantastic Four at the start of this discussion, but if tomorrow someone started trending hashtag release the Trank cut, I'm not joking here. I want to see that movie. I want to see what that movie was when it was all body horror and it didn't have like 45 minutes chopped out of the middle. I don't think it would be good, but I think it would be more interesting. Yeah, I like Jamie Bell, I like Michael B. Jordan, I like Kate Mara, I like Marcel, I like everyone. Reggie Caffey gives a great performance. Like, it's a good movie. Apart from it's not.
Can we give it jointly to those?
Oh, yeah. Or not. My counterpoint, I think Apocalypse is actually significantly worse than Dark Phoenix. So I'll just throw that out there. I think I don't hate Dark Phoenix, but I also do understand the arguments for why it should win this award. So I won't put up too hard of a fight.
Apocalypse, when the opening sequence just like Microsoft screensavers its way through swastikas, and you're going, "What is happening here? Where am I?"
Should we give it to Apocalypse?
Should we just give it to Simon Kinberg?
Yeah,
yeah. I'm down with that.
That's fair. How did Justice League not make this list?
Is it? I don't know if Justice League in and of itself is it's just boring. It's
not as bad as anything on the list, yeah.
It has moments where you're like, this is competent. It's just they don't add up to become anything. It just, for me, it's a void of a movie where I'm like, I can't be angry at it. I just forget that it exists.
Also, I mean, they are going to hashtag release the Snyder Cut. So we don't really have we can't really have an honest take on it yet, you know.
Batman's really gonna swear, yay!
So I think twerk, I've heard there's going to be all this really contemporary, cool, you know, original stuff in it.
I think that we should split the difference here and give it to Dark Phoenix and Fantastic Four. To honour Simon Kinberg's contribution to the last 5 years of superhero movies.
Deal.
Okay, best film, final award. Let's do this, guys. This is the award that we said we would give to Terminator 2 this year, but we're going to say Birds of Prey.
Can we just give it to Terminator 2 and we just move on?
James,
Terminator 2 in the podcast.
James twisted my arm. The other nominees are Snowpiercer, The Dark Knight, The Avengers, Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man. And just to, because I can see Amon's cogs twirling again, The Dark Knight we gave it to in the year of Spider-Verse, Infinity War and Black Panther because we were like if we can't agree for it for new film, we just need to give it to Dark Knight now. But I guess given we have retroactively said into the Spider-Verse, if we want to make the case for that here as well, we can. We also picked Spider-Man over Superman in the first year of this podcast.
I think that was my fault.
This award to me is this is between Avengers, which is the best superhero film that has been made, versus The Dark Knight, which is maybe the most influential film of the 21st century. That's the fight. Go for it, guys. Mm. And I don't know.
Say Spider-Man 2. So
oh shit.
Spider-Man 2 is my one out of this list.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
This is really tough. This list is really tough. I think. For me, this will be between The Dark Knight and Spider-Man 2. Oh, I might go to Spider-Man 2, you know. I think... I'm still thinking. You guys talk, convince me. But it's between those two, The Dark Knight and Spider-Man.
Mike is fiddling with his beard in a very pensive way.
I'm beard stroking because I'm thinking about Snowpiercer, but I remember your argument last year was Snowpiercer felt like a real film compared to a lot of the usual trash you talk about on here. And I'd argue then that shouldn't really be in the mix here because it's not within
it's good.
Within a genre. I think Spider-Man 2 would be my pick. I think that is a foundational film, not just for the last 20 years of superhero blockbuster filmmaking, but also personally. But I think that The Avengers is so important to this podcast, surely. The whole, I can't remember if the years line up at all for when you, Joe, you knew The Avengers was coming up. You want to know, why should I care? Who are all these characters? It feels like we shouldn't overlook that.
The Avengers was certainly the film that that my excitement for all of this stuff boiled over. So I had been watching and really enjoying superhero movies, you know, as long as I've been old enough to go to the cinema and see them. And actually, like, one of the first films that I saw in the cinema, sans parents, was the Raimi Spider-Man. And that film blew my mind. And I bought the DVD and watched it on repeat. And, like, I still, to this day, I know Spider-Man 2 is probably the better film. I would rather watch the first one because I just have a lot of affection for it. But yeah, the first Avengers movie, I saw it at a press screening. I think I was talking to Amon on the way out of that in Leicester Square and just like anyone I could find, just being like, holy shit. And who is that guy? And what's going to happen next? And I was just like, I need some nerds to talk me through this stuff. And like, and eventually I found them. And, you know, I went with Reese a couple of days afterwards on its first day of general release and watched the film with him. Famously, Reese had already seen, no, I think you'd already seen, we'd both seen it separately and you weren't sure. And I loved it. And then we walked out of it from our second viewing. Reese was like, yeah, it was stupid. That's fucking incredible. And it just, it ignited for me anyway. It ignited wanting to know more. Like, I love that movie. And I've talked a lot on this podcast about why I love the movie in particular, but like it was the thing that made me go, well, I kind of want to dive into all of the stuff behind this. And yeah, in terms, personally, in terms of like the floodgates that it opened, the Avengers would be my choice for that reason.
So the only argument I can make in favor of Spider-Man 2 over Avengers is that I think Avengers is a really good MCU superhero action movie, right? In the MCU mold, which is like, here are a bunch of superheroes and they're doing interpersonal superhero things. We don't care that there is a public as well. Whereas Spider-Man 2, for me, feels like it's come straight from the genre as represented in the comics, right? Because it's about Peter's personal life and about the people around him and about how he squares being a superhero with, you know, all of that. And I think comics have moved more in the direction of the Avengers since the MCU started being a thing. But I think as a pure superhero movie, Spider-Man 2 nails it in a way that almost no other one has since.
Where I would kick back against that, though, is when you said that the Avengers is a great movie in the MCU mold. The Avengers is the MCU mold.
Yeah, fair, fair.
Yeah. I would give it to Spider-Man 2 as my answer. Spider-Man 2 as well. Yeah. I think I would lean into Spider-Man 2 as well because
No!
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, it's just Reese's.
He's angry at you. Exactly. I'm cheating for a
because the votes are going in a certain direction. I don't like it.
Sorry, go on, Amon.
Yeah, I think I would lean into Spider-Man 2 for the reasons James said, and also because, you know, Spider-Man, the whole ethos of that character is, you know, the consequences of being Spider-Man and how they relate to Peter Parker. And there's been no Spider-Man film before or since that has dealt with action and consequence for that character better than that film does. I think that's actually something that the MCU Spider-Man could stand to take more notice of. I don't think they get that right all of the time. So yeah, I think, you know, the thing which The Dark Knight has over Spider-Man is that once-in-a-lifetime performance by Heath Ledger, which there's just nothing on a performance level that Spider-Man 2 has over that film. But I think in terms of pure comic book superhero goodness, Spider-Man 2 has it over The Dark Knight. And for that reason, I'm going with Spider-Man 2.
Okay, we need to wrap it up, so I think it's time to vote.
No, because the vote's going to... No, we have to do things to change the mind of the group.
Okay, votes for the Avengers. The Avengers. Spider-Man 2? Spider-Man 2 carries it 4-3. So Spider-Man 2 is the winner of best, best superhero / comic book film ever. Ever.
It's not a bad choice.
It's not. It's really not a bad choice. Reese, what have you been drinking?
Wine.
Yeah.
We fulfilled your original desire to spread the love amongst multiple films. You can't say we didn't do that today. We got a lot covered.
Listen, we covered all the big ones. We got Spider-Man 2. We've got The Dark Knight. We've got The Avengers. We've got Black Panther. And we've got Howard the Duck. Yeah. So I think we've done a fine job. Mm-hmm. Caroline, Reese, Amon, Mike, Al, thank you so much for joining us to litigate the entire history of our podcast. I think we've made some good calls. And I like to think that Seb wouldn't have been too angry with us on too many of them. We felt like it was an appropriate thing to do this at the end of the 6 years as well, given that, I don't think it would have been the same arguing over the year's specific choices without Seb. But also the fact that, over the course of this podcast, we have kind of, in terms of what's been released up to date, we've covered just about everything that feels significant. There's probably going to be a few, but as James and I have discussed, not many that are worthy of spending a full podcast talking about. So we're just about there in terms of those. I think there's maybe two or three left over. But thanks, guys, very much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's fun. It's fun to talk about nerdy shit with your friends, and that is, I think that has become the ethos of this podcast.
If we take anything from this year.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, what I'd like to say is, guys, thank you very much for joining us. 2020, fuck you, and we'll see you in the new year.
Peace.
Cheers.
Thanks, bye. Everyone. Thanks, Joe.
So that was the sixth annual Cuppies, and as you now know, kind of like the amalgam Cuppies, the Champion of Champions edition.
Don't worry, knows? We'll make sure Reese gets the help he needs.
He was cheesed. So you join us back in the present to run through the Hall of Fame, which is something that we didn't have time to go through on that main record there. We didn't want to keep everyone chatting into the wee hours to do the last bits of admin. But the Hall of Fame, James, always fun to reel off this list of names that we've put into it in previous years.
Yeah.
As you chuckle and go, why? We added that person, did we? Okay. 2015, the inductee was Nicolas Cage. 2016.
Naturally Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, because he'd had Kick-Ass and Ghost Rider, and we were like, what else will we... We're not going to put him in for Spirit of Vengeance. And obviously, he just added to that by doing Teen Titans voices and
I was going to say, if we had known he was going to be in Spider-Verse and Teen Titans Go, we might have waited until that.
He's got a whole wing to himself now. 2016, we added Hayley Atwell and Sam Raimi. 2017, well, again, those two
again.
Never came back to do superhero movie stuff again. 2017, Hugh Jackman, Michael Keaton, and Laurie Petty. 2018, Stan Lee, Vincent D'Onofrio, Heath Ledger, and J.K. Simmons. 2019, Marcus and McFeely, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Tilda Swinton, and Wesley Snipes. So 2020, James, we could carry on that tradition of adding an extra name every year, but it's...
We can't, though, because we have to socially distance the Hall of Fame.
And at some point, it would be like Richard Herring with his Ferrero Rocher. There would just be... the logistics just wouldn't be right. So we had a chat offline and we thought that we would put just two people into the Hall of Fame this year. And I think probably listeners, this will probably make sense why we've done this, but also it just after the kind of the idea was floated, there didn't really feel like it felt like the most appropriate thing and the right thing we could do. this year we are going to put in Seb Patrick and Chadwick Boseman into our Cinematic Universe Hall of Fame. Let's start off with Chadwick Boseman, James, because it's probably easier for us to. We're never going to see, sadly, another performance from Chadwick Boseman. And you know, what was immediately clear after he passed away was what an impact he had left. And I do think that, you know, we've put a lot of names in there ahead of him, looking back, we probably thought, well, we're going to get loads more Chadwick Boseman.
Was the thing, wasn't it? Like a lot of our reasoning was we're never going to see better from these people than we've seen this year, and we assumed Chadwick Boseman's best was ahead of him.
But what he did leave behind between, I think, you know, obviously Black Panther itself, that single movie is the crowning achievement, but what he brought to the other MCU movies that he appeared in. And I think, you know, we talked about this when he passed away, the impact he left off the screen as well. And the way that he really embraced carrying the mantle of Black Panther and what Black Panther represented, I was going to say to the African-American community, but that's not true, is it? It's to
everyone,
audiences. Well, to black audiences worldwide particularly, but you know, the fact that it did resonate so hugely beyond that as well was, yeah, really testament to that performance and how he, yeah, and how he just embraced it away from the screen. And, you know, knowing what he was going through while he was filming all of that stuff is just, it just adds.
It's crazy looking back on it to think, isn't it? Like, that people just had no idea. No one had any idea. After Endgame came out, I watched 21 Bridges. Because I was like, I want to see what he's like when he's not being the Black Panther. And he was clearly just a really good leading man. He would have had such a future ahead of him.
And, you know, what it sounds like as well, I haven't seen Ma Rainey's Black Bottom yet, but it sounds like he is the front runner for Best Supporting Actor at this year's Oscars. And he also gives a film that I have seen. He also gives a really phenomenal supporting performance in The Five Bloods, the Spike Lee movie, the Spike Lee movie from earlier this year that was on Netflix. So, you know, it's tragic that we won't get to see any more performances, but I do think he is going to be, you know, we're going to look back in a couple of decades time at that performance and that role in a way that we do with Christopher Reeve Superman, and not just because he was taken early, just because I think it was that iconic and it meant that much to people.
Yeah, well, it seems like a big deal that they've decided not to recast the character.
Yeah, and I don't know how they, I don't know how they could.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
It feels like such a big deal, but also like they've made the only decision that, you know, they made the only choice that was really that made
appropriate, insane. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Chadwick Boseman inducted into the Hall of Fame, and then I know we've done this a lot on the podcast, but you know, we wanted to take another moment to honor Seb here, I guess. put Seb into the Hall of Fame. This feels very appropriate. I think Seb would get a real kick out of this.
Like, I think he would as well. Yeah,
it's him and Chadwick Boseman and Stan Lee and Robert Downey Jr. and Hugh Jackman. I think Seb would love that. When I say fuck you 2020 to the end of this, to the, you know, the end of the main podcast, this year was tough, obviously, for everyone with the pandemic and lockdown and quarantine. And I think, you know, it is, and lots of people, you know, lots of people have lost loved ones this year. But, you know, when I look back at this year, I think, you know, losing Seb was just this, you know, this bolt from the blue in the middle of a horrendous year that just felt, it still feels kind of like it towers over everything else. And
yeah, it was a real blindsiding moment, wasn't it?
And I think about, you know, I think about Seb as often as I do any kind of, you know, quarantine related things this year. It was just brutal and horrible, and we miss him. But when I was thinking earlier today about my favorite moments from this year, because it's, you know, it's been a really shitty year, and trying to pick out those positive aspects, those positive moments can be tough. But I was thinking about how, you know, like the one side effect of quarantine that has been good for me is it means that I don't have to commute to and from work each morning, and that means that I get to spend a couple of extra hours a day with my daughter. Or if it's one of the days where she's at home rather than at nursery, it means if I nip downstairs to get a coffee in the middle of the day, I get to see her for 5 minutes, and that's lovely. And I was thinking, you know, my friends were able to get married in November, just squeezed in between in between different tiering announcements and national lockdowns, which was lovely. But then I think, what, you know, when I think back to like one of the most positive things that I could see come out of this year was the response to Seb's death, and the way that people rallied around and raised all that money for his family, I thought was, you know,
And like knowing Joe, I know exactly what a difference it made as well. Like, I know Seb would not have expected that. Certainly not in the amount he got it.
It was incredible, wasn't it? And you know the amount of people who then who reached out and said kind things and
mm-hmm. and continue to be fair, like people people still ask.
Yeah,
know, still and, ask, still ask if I'm okay, if his family's okay.
And it's, I mean, we've both said this privately, but you know, I could only dream of that many people saying that many nice things after I died. It's just, and when you saw kind of like beyond like the different like pop culture bubbles that he touched online and the different communities that he was a part of on the internet, the fact, you know, that we were there thinking, oh, wouldn't it be really like he submitted this video and he wanted to for him and Lois to be in the end credits of Bill and Ted, and we were thinking, wouldn't it be nice if that could actually happen? And even better than that, the screenwriter of Bill and Ted knew Seb by name from their interactions online and posted a lengthy tribute on his Twitter to Seb.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just, I that was, I think, one of the bright spots for me this year was the way that people responded.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the people listening to us right now are a good deal of the people who responded in that way and said those kind things. And, you know, I think it's worth saying to those people that it meant a lot, and it meant a lot to everyone who donated for his family. And yeah, I think, you know, obviously this podcast is one of the communities that Seb had forged online. And I think it's a thank you to everyone who did say those nice things and donate that money. And we, you know, as if Seb isn't already, you know, enshrined in this podcast forever, we thought let's make it formal and put him in the Hall of Fame. and Seb does get a wing, right? Maybe some of these other chumps can move into Seb's wing.
I assumed he'd be on the door, to be honest. He'd be able to greet people.
Yeah.
Or turn them away.
Yeah, turn them away. Explain to them on the way in. So the thing about the Starman exhibit is... so that is our Hall of Fame for this year. James, we do have one episode in the bank for next year. I guess we can just say what that is now, because it's going to be the next thing that listeners hear, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
We have a Blade Trinity episode in the bank that Caroline Cedar was a guest on. We didn't, given that it's coming out next year and we recorded it before this, but it isn't being released before this. We thought we wouldn't include it in the copies today.
In fairness, it would not have made a dent in the nominations.
The only thing I think it could have impacted is worst movie. But it definitely isn't a Howard T. Duck award.
No, exactly.
So, so yeah, you can look forward to Blade Trinity, and then we best get recording some episodes, James.
Yeah, we've got New Mutants and Wonder Woman 84 out in January, so it's going to be busy.
And then the Disney Plus train will kick into gear.
Yeah.
Oh, finally. Lots of content is coming.
The year
James.
Without Marvel has ended.
and you know, fingers crossed, touch wood, we will be back in cinemas by the summer and able to see stuff like Black Widow.
Fully vaccinated and ready to watch the Snyder Cut in its 4-hour glory.
Please, you know, if we are blessed with being able to return to cinemas, Can we just keep the Snyder Cut on HBO Max? And I do just mean HBO Max. It doesn't need to find a UK distributor. Are you going to watch it, James?
Yeah, just out of sheer morbid curiosity, I will. Just to imagine what the process was of turning half of a finished movie into a different movie.
Maybe this can be my Watchmen.
Maybe.
I don't want them to shit on the original vision.
On the original Joss Whedon, Zack Snyder sort of hybrid monster vision.
Oh, God. So, well, hey, look, there's something to not look forward to in every year, and that's one thing not to look forward to next year. But what we should do, though, James, is if we do cover that on the podcast, is like get someone who's not really into it because those people are scary, but get someone who like maybe likes it. That would be good.
Yeah.
We might like it. Maybe it'll turn us around. Maybe we'll be like, fuck, they were right all along.
Maybe. I think that can be our pledge for 2021.
We'll find someone who
we will find the person who doesn't hate it and get them on.
But definitely not someone who loves it.
Yeah.
Or already knows that they love it, you know.
Anyone who has tweeted using the release the Snyder Cut hashtag will be excluded by default.
Great. So, listeners, you can look forward to all of that in 2021. As I said, we'll be back with our Blade Trinity episode in a week.
Fairly quickly, hopefully. In a week or two. We want to get to Wonder Woman as quickly as we can.
Yeah, it's ready. It's ready. It's in the bank. It would be rude of us not to let you listen to it. I think it devolves into me just talking about Ryan Reynolds' abs. Can't exactly remember.
As so, most conversations do, yeah.
Yeah. Who's Joe listing after this week? Could be anyone. So listeners, thank you very much for sticking with us during this trying year. We will be back with Blade Trinity and lots more in 2021. See you next year.
Goodbye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.